So are you saying Benjamin Netanyahu deliberately boosted Hamas to try to prevent a Palestinian state?
Yeah, sure. He deliberately and systematically even told on record, whoever wants to avoid the threat of a two-state solution has to support my policy of paying protection money to the Hamas.
So what we did, with the permission of our prime minister, is to let Qatar to transfer a huge amount of money in cash, probably more than $1.4 billion. By doing it, we increased the power of Hamas. We did everything in order to make sure that Hamas will go on controlling Gaza, and Palestinian Authority will control the West Bank, so they will fight each other.
Netanyahu maintains the Qatar money was to avoid a humanitarian catastrophe. Having helped to build up Hamas, Netanyahu has now vowed to destroy it.
He fed the beast and it exploded in our face. If you base...
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Saturday, March 23rd, 2024. Thank you for joining me today. An important follow-up from the coverage from yesterday in regard to the Crocus City Hall attack, the Moscow attack, and some interesting follow-ups that we discussed yesterday. A lot of the stuff that we went over yesterday, even the kind of theoretical conversations, the hypothetical, seemingly are flushing out today with more and more evidence coming out. And I don't even mean in regard to who at this point. I just mean about the core discussions about, you know, things like what ISIS really is at a core discussion, or it, like I framed in the title today, is ISIS-K even real? Does it even exist? Now, when I say that, I don't mean necessarily that it's something that's literally not there. That's certainly possible. But my point is that it's somewhere in between these conversations about a proxy entity that has been met, you know, illegitimate, what's the right word for it, that has been put together, that is led by people that don't truly believe the things they're saying to manipulate the people that they manipulate. Sort of like the way Zionists manipulate Judaism. It's the same concept. And it's not surprisingly coming from the same type of discussions, both Zionism, the U.S. government, behind what we're talking about. So it's not that hard to wrap your mind around. But same thing has been said about ISIS in general, that Saudi Arabia has made more than one comment about how they were, in fact, behind funding and supporting these entities, and they've even lost control of them. And the idea being that ISIS-K, as we went over yesterday, the Afghanistan version of this, at one point, and maybe today, is still real, a real entity with real people that are involved in it. But the idea being, is it really what we're told? And then even more so, is it even actually really there? And I'll make both the arguments in the sense that it seems to be something that is pointed to both by pretty much every U.S. ally, but specifically Israel, the United States over the years in cases where the evidence seems to point back to something like an Israeli attack or a CIA attack or, you know, behind the attack. The point I mentioned yesterday is, you know, Pakistan points to India saying they're behind ISIS-K. India points to Pakistan saying they're behind ISIS-K. It seems like a catch-all. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's not a group that's there. But again, the argument is that it was at one point something, but has ultimately been diminished or just disappeared in the background and is now sort of a, you know, a catch-all that's used in cases like this. That's an argument. And I think it's important to consider that, even coming back to the core point about ISIS, is does ISIS even really exist? Or is this an ultimate, you know, patch together proxy entity, which, again, I think it's obvious, as I said in last show, that we need to break away from these kind of concerns that we're going to be seen as conspiracy. Let's acknowledge the evidence for what it shows, that it's undeniable that Israel supports ISIS in different ways, or these extremists, and the U.S. and the United States and Israel are actively utilizing this as their own little proxy army. That is not hard to see. Are there other elements that act on their own accord? Of course. Or, I mean, obviously likely. But I think what's important to see is that that is an undeniable reality, that they are funding and arming. I mean, this is an argument that goes to the broad conversation in the Middle East, that they have been, as we can prove, funding the most radical elements of the thing they claim they're fighting. I mean, it really, again, there's so many parallels. Should not that be that hard to consider? seeing as how Biden seems to be waging a war on white supremacy and even Nazism while literally funding the most obvious example of both those things in the world today. Same concept, isn't it? It's all about narrative. Now, what's important to think about is how this could be used. And we'll go over some of that information again today in regard to ISIS-K that I think relates to this larger point, and even highlighting the Kerman attack in Iran and the people behind that, and all this all ties together with the same kind of conversations. But I want to think about, you know, the way I framed it on the article today, or the title again today as well, that the three of them, Ukraine, Israel, the United States, all the evidence to me seems to point to this kind of conglomerate being behind this, or, you know, in regard to accountability, culpability, complicity, you know, working with other people, all those things are possible. But what I want people to think about today is it doesn't really, like, that ultimately these entities, I think we need to see as sort of like this trifecta of that they have their own actions. I know, let's be very clear. Israel and the United States have their own agendas, have their own actions, and even to some degree Ukraine. But the way I say it like that is because I see Ukraine very clearly since the 2014 coup and the picking of their own, you know, literally hand selecting the cabinet, Nuland and the rest of them just picking who is going to be there and acting like it's democracy. It is another proxy entity, just like a lot of the ones we talk about. And the point being that that means they're much less in control of these actions. But even that, there's a whole caveat about the extremists that they fund, like everywhere else, acting in their own accord. But that's all that aside. My point is that Israel and the United States clearly are in line with a lot of these agendas, funding these extremist entities while pointing at everybody else. And what we're seeing here today is ultimately whether one of them is whether all three are working together to achieve this, whether it's only one of them between those two options. I think it ultimately comes back to the same point. They're all involved in different ways in these agendas. Now, whether it's, we could argue about whether one of them acted in their own accord, you know, independently for whatever reason, decided to do this of their own accord because, you know, the Ukraine makes the best case there that they would just decide to do this because that makes sense. It's obvious with the dynamic. But does that mean that Israel and the United States were unaware that it might have been happening, or that they, you know, the point is it all comes back to their responsibility either way because of what they created there. But I genuinely think there's more overlap and coordination here. Now, all the evidence today and more so seems to be much more so pointing towards CIA and Ukraine overlap behind this, not so much Israel and the evidence of today. But I say that's why I wanted to explain it like that, because I genuinely think, and this is not just a way to try to make them all guilty, because it's what the evidence points to. And I think it's important to see that they are behind these kind of manipulations around ISIS and how that relates to Ukraine and even Ukraine itself and Azov movement being funded by Israel. It just, all this is so interesting. And I want to, you know, thinking about it like that, recognizing that the evidence behind their culpability around this one event is very transparent. And it goes back to the events around, you know, around October 7th and the Hamas argument. And I think even more interestingly is Israel making these arguments today. And I think we're going to see it today in front of Congress. And I'll shout out who actually put that point in my head, that they're going to come out and try to connect this with Hamas. And I think that's one of the most important reasons the aggressive effort with little evidence is being made to point to ISIS or ISIS-K in some overlap with what they want you to think is Hamas. And I think that argument's already being made online, but I think that's going to be made by Netanyahu in front of Congress. And I think it's going to be the effort to try to make the argument for more funding and the idea of simply trying to connect all of this into being, we're all fighting the same thing and it's Hamas and what we're fighting. So no genocide, help us do this thing. Now that's from an Israel perspective. That's just about what Israel may use this for. But you should step back and ask whether they might have put this to made this happen to achieve that end. One of the many possibilities. And I find it really telling that so many of these very clear Zionist supporters came out hot out of the gates before we had knew anything, claiming that it was incorrect to consider Israel as one of the possible culprits. How you're a racist for considering one of the obvious people who might be behind this. And I find that so telling. And even right now, as we have arguments of, you know, ISIS claimed responsibility, or here are the people that are being arrested, that still does not show you who or what, you know, all we know now is that there are people that were paying them, at least what they said. That could even be lies. And you're arguing we know it's not Israel. Doesn't that seem lacking journalistic integrity? Obviously. The point should be we can consider all possibilities until we can prove something. Now, let's jump into what the evidence that I think is important to get out of, you know, to start with. And I think that's around the ISIS conversation and the United States seemingly being the only one kind of holding that claim together by, other than the whatever ISIS is, standing up and saying, we did this, which has been done before and later turns out wasn't whatever we think ISIS is. So remember that. But the point being that the United States State Department is saying it's ISIS. Our evidence shows that, and then not giving any evidence, which people point to that as evidence. That's not evidence. That's a statement that they have evidence, but they're not showing you that. How many times has that led us astray? I don't even need to get into that. I mean, there's an endless amount of examples. So let's start with that. Well, before that, just a couple of quick points that I wanted to include that relate to a degree, a small degree. Either way, I think it's important. And this is the omnibus bill just passed. And this is a Geiger Capital pointing this out. Just one of the places I saw share this, the just account. I'm not sure. I'm not really familiar with the work, saying the omnibus bill just passed. This is not how our country was supposed to work. There are supposed to be individual bills for each department of government, not one giant bill stuffed with lobbyist demands forced through in 24 hours. Which, I mean, he makes an excellent point. And what's weird is we all know that, everybody, including politicians who periodically make the point, like Rand Paul or Massey, who make, you know, post the stack on their desk and say, hey, I've got 15 minutes to read this. What do you think? So we all know that. And weirdly, nothing ever changes. Why is that? It's not like they've passed legislation that makes this the case. This is illegitimate, in my opinion. And here's the crazy part. Look at this bill. His other post from the 21st, saying Congress is once again about to pass another omnibus bill, spending bill. They increase spending every year when, I mean, everybody everywhere doesn't want that to happen. And it says, and then throw everything into one giant bill so that it passes easier and ensures that no one can even read it by design. You know how many things Israel probably shoehorned into this? And that's one of the largest points of this, is that in this discussion, there is a guarantee that they won't fund UNRWA until 2025, till March, 1 year from now. That's while they have stated how important their role is. It just shows you where the real power lies. They can say all they want, Blinken and Biden and Kirby. They can say all their crocodile tears and all of their fancy words all day. They want. It doesn't mean anything when it goes the exact opposite direction. It's like saying we raised the issue, we care about human rights, and then literally give them weapons to murder people that day. So this is frustrating. That's just one point. You go through this and it will blow your mind, the kind of stuff that gets shoehorned in. And this isn't even about writers. Like, the point is every bill typically has something where they kind of just jam in, you know, they play the game or they go, well, we'll agree to this bill if you let us put this at the corner. This is about just kind of exactly like they're describing it. This massive stack that none of them read. And they all admit that. They just sign based on their party lines. I mean, some of them try to read through it, but imagine trying to read that 2 a.m. in the morning. Here's your bill. Read it. We're voting tomorrow. It's designed this way. And I agree with them. This is not how it's supposed to work. And we are all being manipulated. All of us. Meanwhile, the left-right screamers and the two-party illusion and all of their punditry are out there telling you it's all supposed to work. We just got to get rid of the other side. Yeah, that's going to work, right? Seeing as how they're all involved. Children. But, and I also wanted to point out this, which is hilarious to me. Again, not that I even care about these, you know, censorship at all really anymore, other than if it starts happening on these platforms that were, you know, the ones that claim they're not, like Twitter, or excuse me, I mean, YouTube, and, well, Twitter too, by the way, we know they're censoring, but YouTube, for example, I'm done even trying to, like, that's why I've never made a new account and why I use pirate accounts on YouTube, because it's just that guarantee that it won't, I'm not going to let them allow me to build up that basket again for them to destroy it, right? All I'm saying for that for is that Facebook is the same thing for me. I'm done with that, but I'll still use pirate accounts. But I'm showing you this because I think it's interesting what they will censor. And this is the one we just did yesterday. Now, you watched the show, probably. We didn't go over anything that's even, like, the whole show was about just hypothetical, like, here's evidence, here's what people are claiming, here's the history, and everything we pointed to was pretty much corporate media stuff or even, you know, U.S. documents or Israeli, and yet they censored it? Yeah. And this one just says we removed it. Doesn't even say why. Now, which, again, is not that shocking. Everyone here is like, yep, that happens. I just think it's interesting that when it happens, right? Weirdly enough, over the last so many months and so, they've stopped censoring a lot of the Israel stuff. And it just shows you that they have these kind of times where this is just not supposed to be. Now, that is interesting to me. This event. And by the way, there are shootings and things like this that happen that we don't get this kind of coverage and this kind of pushback. But I don't want us to have the mindset where it's, if this happens, we know there's something there. But that's an indication that we shouldn't overlook. When this kind of weird censorship that's like basically at a time when nobody really knows what happened, that they start censoring around the narrative the media says might be the case, but no one else is allowed to say any other hypothetical when we still don't know. Doesn't that show you something? They're censoring in line with what they don't even know, but they've picked already. And that's usually how mainstream works. They have like a general narrative that they get from the State Department, and they all just kind of they just stay with it. New things are popping up every day, especially with the way social media works. Every 5 minutes, and we're covering that. And we compilate it all for you, and they're still stuck on day one narrative they got from the State Department, and usually stay with it. Other than a couple of large things they have to shoehorn in. Isn't that interesting? And this is why I think it's being censored, even though it's basically just a overview of all the data, not provable, just all the different things that you should consider. And that scares them more than anything. We can't let people make up their minds about what's happening. They're supposed to listen to us. Didn't Morning Joe tell you that? We're supposed to be the ones that tell you what to think. Oops. Well, we just covered this yesterday. On the title is "Who is Behind the Moscow Crocus City Hall Attack?" And again, we went over pretty much everything that I thought was relevant yesterday. Now, we're going to go over mostly new stuff today and only a few overlaps that have to do specifically with ISIS-K that I find really fascinating. Like, I think this whole thing is highlighting something that's much bigger than this one event, or even just bigger than ISIS. I think it really comes, that's where the overlaps jump into my mind. The, you know, funding of Nazis while you're pretending you're fighting Nazis. I mean, it's just this constant thing that's going on. And we need to stand back and recognize that this is their hallmark, guys. This is what they do. This is their modus operandi. They fund the worst people and then use that to justify fighting who they want, pretending they're fighting those groups. And I can't say it everywhere, but in some cases that they would then push these groups into the areas they want to invade and so on. Now, that's not a shocking point. We know that for most people that are paying attention, but I would argue that it's pretty much every time we see this. Now, we can prove some cases like that, but, you know, that's my point about some of these groups may just decide to do their own thing one day. I don't know how we can ever not, you know, prove every time that they're driving every action. That's why the real point comes back to they funded them, they created them, they drive them, they're behind them, they're shuttling them around in certain times of war. So they're responsible. It's the same point about Israel funding Hamas, which we'll go over slightly again today, because of who people are already trying to connect this, saying it's the same thing. So don't they care if that's the case, which it's not, don't they care that the person they're supporting literally, or the entity literally funded the group and made them who they are? Of course not. Doesn't that show you a lack of discernment or even just honesty? Yes. So go over this if you want to get caught up. And there's a lot that's in there that I won't cover today. So let's start with the main point I said to start about the idea this is today. U.S. has intelligence that we don't get to see confirming Islamic State responsibility for Russia attack, officials say. I just hate stuff like this because, I mean, look, is it national security? Is there a reason we can't see it? I mean, can't you at least describe the outlines of what might be? Nope, we don't get any of that. What we get is a flimsy discussion about how they tell us this is the case. Officials said United States has warned Russia, and this is saying about the warning, which I'll get into, which, you know, everyone is talking about. It is a very important point. There's just one thing that was standing out before. The ultimate point is that what they're claiming is that this is something that they you know, their intelligence shows. I mean, they might have updated this. This is on the archive. I grabbed the most recent one just because I thought, but the one I read earlier, there might be a current version that should. So basically, what I'm laughing about right now is that if you read this, and I skimmed it just now, I don't see anything. I'm thinking there was before. Earlier this month, the U.S. government had information about a planned attack. The U.S. government has also shared the information with Russia. It's just simply saying the United States has intelligence confirming that they claimed the shooting, officials say. As far as I can tell, that is literally the only thing in there about that claim. 60 people were killed. Islamic State militant group that once sought control claimed responsibility. And all they're saying is on this Telegram account. That's it. So you're literally telling us that the U.S. government and all of their insurmountable surveillance and everything, all they're doing, insurmountable is the wrong word, but you know, just over all encompassing surveillance, that they just look at the Telegram channel like everybody else. And that's how they know for sure. A Telegram channel? I mean, what's funny is that ultimately, I was just talking about this with Orwell today. I mean, I rarely use Telegram channels for this show because you can't verify this stuff. It's videos and claims, and they shouldn't be dismissed. it should all be considered. But if it's not verifiable, and so my point is, if you go through this, you'll find very quickly that's it. They talk about warning them. Okay, so all you come back to is the U.S. saying they've got intelligence. Now, remember when they told us they knew about WMDs? Remember when they told us they knew that Syrian rebels had, or rather specifically Syrian military had carried out gas attacks, but it turned out to be the Syrian rebels, which is an important point for today because they weren't rebels. They were extremists that they later admitted they weren't so moderate. They were actually really, really bad guys. Hayat Tahrir al-Sham and all the things, the groups that are right now in Idlib, by the way. Open terrorist, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and Al-Tanf. These are hotbeds of terrorism, and they're basically U.S. bases. There's a point that we're going to come to today specifically about that. And some of the people that they're currently caught tie right back to Syria, right back to the funding that goes through there to Israel, to the United States, to CIA, all of it. Before we get there, the point is simply that they just keep claiming these things with nothing to back it up, and they've done that many times. I mean, more often than not, am I wrong? How they just say, we know this, intelligence says. The media then goes, we know this because they said, and that's how this works. And then the other media points to the bigger media, and they go, that media said, and all of a sudden there's this huge body of evidence. All it is they said so, and everyone reported that 14 times over and cited the one before them. It's the same thing Israel's doing right now with all of their allegations. They have a new person recite the same thing a little different way, a new article who covers it, and cites the older article, and then they point back at each other, and all of a sudden there's this body of evidence that's all it comes back to is statements that we've never verified. On top of all of that, despite the countless examples of the U.S. government claiming intelligence that never materializes, ultimately doesn't exist, RT India came out. This is yesterday. Fake, and it says fake. Rumors ISIS claim responsibility for terrorist attacks are unfounded. What it's saying is this widely shared image, which apparently comes from this Telegram channel, of what alleges to be a statement by the group taking responsibility for the incident uses a news template that ISIS apparently abandoned many years ago. Now, that doesn't mean maybe they just used it again for some reason, right? Or it means that they're just tapping back into what they used back then and things have changed since then, or however you look at it. The point is, it suggests that this is not really what it looks like. Just one of the small data points. Now, the interesting thing about this was we get into the supposed leader of ISIS-K, who they're now telling us is in charge, who's behind all of this. Even they reported that he was killed before, which is not that shocking. Apparently, they've killed al-Baghdadi like 17 times or like six or seven. But either way, all of this seems really flimsy. And there's claims that have been made from this group, U.S. and Israel, now are being contradicted. So right there, you should be like, well, wait a minute. So they're going, we know for sure now. Just like before, they said, we know for sure he was killed. But now he's not. So all I'm simply showing you is that we should obviously question their claims when there's no evidence behind it. But here's what we're seeing online. Now, I wanted to address this first for a reason. Ian Miles Chong, which, I mean, I don't know why anybody takes at, you know, like a journalistic level, people like this on Twitter, these kind of like constant commentators just on Twitter that just regurgitate and half of what they do ends up being false. Here he says, ISIS, we did it, which of course, you know, again, there's countless examples of whatever we think ISIS is saying they take responsibility for something that did not end up being them more than once, by the way, including, by the way, the current, the Iran bombing that they claimed ISIS was responsible for. We're going to get into that too. We're all being fed lots of lies around what's ultimately happening. But either way, that aside, let's just pretend they did say that. Russia, he says ISIS did it. That I don't see that anywhere. In fact, I'll show you what Putin and the Russian government are saying. And I don't see them claiming ISIS did it. That's certainly one of the possibilities. In fact, what I see and what I sense from what they're saying is it's far more likely Ukraine and the U.S. is behind it. That's the sense I'm getting from them. But of course, for him, that just makes a good tweet. Right? This is the kind of BS that people follow. But then he says, the U.S. says, ISIS did it. So apparently that's just supposed to be so important and sound because ISIS, Russia, and the U.S. government say that they know that he's mad that we didn't just take that at face value, you know, because journalism, right? Because he says, people on social media, Israel did it, Ukraine did it, the CIA did it, the Russians that did it themselves, it didn't even happen. Which, by the way, quite frankly, all of those possibilities seem far more likely to me than what they're telling you the truth is. I just think it's hilarious, isn't it? Somebody who otherwise would try to be this like pithy commentator about how you don't see the truth just blindly takes the commentary directly from the government and ISIS, and we're crazy. He could be right. I just think it's funny, this like sure of themselves statement that you're all dumb because I blindly took what they said. Like, I don't think they realize how dumb that looks. But in any case, My point is, I don't know why that would be the, I think it's because it's a self-serving point that I think he, I'm actually not sure whether he's like a supporter of Israel or not, but that would make sense to me with this kind of a statement. But this entity very much is the wildly pro-Zionist Rebel News, you know, and again, who did pretty good coverage on the COVID stuff, which I don't know whether that was in order to gain clout or they just believe that, you know, or they're not seeing through this. I really don't know. Quite frankly, I don't know how anybody can't see what's going on with Israel. That's not to say that we're going, yay, people killed on October 7th. That's just stupid. No way to just assume that kind of back and forth. The point is that regardless of what you think, and we should be including the IDF overlap and Hannibal directive and all that, but regardless, how do we pretend like what's going on in Israel, no matter what you put over it, is somehow okay, which is what they're doing. It just makes me sick. I hate to say it just because it's subjective in my opinion, but it makes me just go, you're a bad person. How is it possible that you can just look the other way? 15,000 children. Oh, it's all fake. They're not even starving. Everything's happening. All the food they want. It's just so disgusting. Now, I'll have some things at the end that I might touch on if time in regard to some of those points that I think overlaps, but I just had to say that right there. Now, the point is, this is Avi Yamini from Rebel News. And he simply highlights the same thing, which, by the way, at the very least, RT is claiming they think is not real. Take that with a grain of salt, whatever you think. He highlights this screenshot, by the way. Hashtag, oh yeah, hold on. I just have to. Where is it? Right here. You just got Twitter filed. Because that's just exactly what this is. Here's a screenshot that somebody sent me claiming this, and because it aligns with what I think, I'm going to go, no, it's of course that's the truth, because I know. Which happens everywhere today. But it says, while the usual lunatics on X, and by the way, this is yesterday, at a time when literally nobody, and even today, nobody knows for sure who's behind this. We have all opinions, but as far as I can tell, there's nothing that's absolutely definitive. But according to this guy, he knows for sure it's not Israel at a time when nobody has any evidence to suggest who's behind it. Doesn't that seem ridiculous? Like, just take Israel out of the conversation. Just make it about any multiple grouping of countries that are likely responsible. And just to go, right after it happens, it's not possibly Germany because we know. But nobody knows because nobody has any evidence. But you just exclude that one group because you're have an affinity for Germany? Well, yeah, that would be like, well, that's ridiculous. Let's make sure we have evidence before we start excluding possibilities. But when it's Israel, of course, you're just anti-Semitic for even considering they might be responsible, despite the obvious responsibility many times before this that they lied about. You get the point. I really want people to recognize how many manipulators out there that might not even realize they're manipulators, but I don't think that's the case here. But he says, while the lunatics on X and Twitter are busy blaming Israel and America for the barbaric attack in Moscow today, ISIS claims responsibility. Again, so one, a picture, or let's just assume he saw the Telegram channel, which, by the way, is still just a picture, that you use that and then just go, oh, ISIS said. So you're taking ISIS's word for it? You trust ISIS now because Israel's something you protect? I mean, again, I could harp on this all day, but I just think that's hilariously stupid. And he says, and because I'm consistent, consistently biased for Israel, but he says, I say no ceasefire until Russia tracks down every jihadi involved and holds them accountable. And there's your real kicker. Of course, because we're talking about the same dynamic, right? Same thing. They're just going after a select group of terrorists. So let me ask you this. Is Russia bombing entire cities to go after that one terrorist? And then saying that's okay because human shields or because we think they're doing that. Like, think about what an embarrassing argument that is just to gaslight for Israel. That you're going to pretend like, we demand a ceasefire. In what context? I mean, he knows that's not the same thing, but they're just clumsily making that argument because they want you to think all Israel's doing is pinpoint targeting specific jihadis. And that's all. And we're just trying to stop them from killing Hamas. You know, and the 40,000 people they're killing and the 70% women. That maybe that too. But my point is to highlight that this is very clearly an agenda that we're going to see prominently today. Now, he also points out ISIS claimed responsibility for the Moscow attack. Turns out Putin's support for Hamas doesn't shield Russia from their Islamist attacks. Putin's support for Hamas, you know, it's just so embarrassing. All they can do, this to me is about trying to patch this all together. Right. And so really, to me, the argument that because Putin is I haven't seen them come out super hot about Palestine, but I've seen him make statements about how this, you know, ceasefire and whatever else. But now you're arguing again, I guess. See, it's almost contradictory that now, so they went after him, even though he's working with Hamas. So my point is, you just have your cake, eat it too, right? Just make your argument and then go, but the, even though this completely contradicts what I said before, we'll just pretend, but who knows? I guess he didn't work for him. It's just, it's lazy. I wouldn't even call it journalism. But here is more. Tommy Robinson, you know, the guy who just came hot back onto the scene right when the Israel thing started, because that's not suspicious, but here's what he says. The men who just massacred innocents in a theater in Russia share the same worldview, because we know, right? Because ISIS said, and ideology as Hamas, which, by the way, isn't even true. That's the idea that ISIS and Hamas are the same thing is embarrassingly ignorant. And there's a lot that it would take a bunch. But the whole point is that's something. In fact, I'm going to write this down for something that potentially have, you know, a writer and maybe Robert or somebody cover on our platform, because it deserves a long conversation. But just simply the simple point is ideological differences. But because it doesn't matter, because these people are racist, bigoted mindset that they're all the same, because Muslim, Arab, whatever else, they just make it all the same because all Muslims think the same thing. That's the kind of sentiment. It's like trying to say that Iran is ISIS, or they support ISIS, and then when they want, saying, well, no, but ISIS is fighting them, because it's dumb. Or saying that Hamas is Nazis, but also ISIS. It's just about labeling them and dehumanizing them, whatever you think about them. And the bottom line here is, because ISIS spoke up, and apparently Tommy Robinson blindly listens to ISIS or believes them because they say so, that they have the same worldview as Hamas. But that's not even true, actually, assuming it's even a real group. But let's let this stand for now. And he says, as Hamas for, and says, for you all pro-Palestine wankers. Okay, so now because you believe in Palestinians, not Hamas, now you're part of this? Yes, because they're showing you that they've always thought all Palestinians are bad, and that's the truth. He goes, watch the videos. It's the reality of who they are. You know, the videos of those people that appear to be white men, which we'll get into, which is interesting to me. And why the video gives you any insight to what you're claiming? It's all blind, subjective assumption based on what they want it to be. But here's it gets even more interesting. He says, actually, I think I've got it up here. Yeah. So that's, he's tagging his tweet here. And here's what he says. He goes, the official ISIS outlet, which again, doesn't anybody ask why that's weird? So apparently they're censoring press TV everywhere, but ISIS is allowed to have their own outlet and nobody worries about that. You see what I mean? Like, doesn't that strike you as a little bit odd? But we'll just leave that alone, because it's obvious, the idea that they're allowed to have an outlet, which people, even the corporate media sites when they want to, but they, you know, the ISIS mainstream media over here called Al-Alamah takes responsibility for the terror attack in Moscow, saying they specifically targeted an event for Christians at the shopping mall. Interesting. But guess what? He says, look, see, we can prove it, because Russia's going, here, we arrested these people. Except one of the groups that put this out, this has been circulating, that they ultimately removed that post, because it turns out that those five people, even though one of them does appear to look similar to one of the guys, but the more I look at it, it does not appear to be him, but maybe it is. But overall, meaning that they've been now found out that that's false, because those individuals, they can prove, were killed in a previous operation, apparently months ago. But my point is simple, that this is the kind of stuff you get. It's the hallmark of a CIA Mossad type operation, where you flood, just like with what's going on in Gaza, you flood the field with BS in hopes that and what it looks like to me is create the sentiment that this is a Muslim overlap, or specifically, you know, Arab, whatever, something that you can overlap with what you claim Hamas is. But it doesn't matter, because, you know, he's right and he knows that, even though the post has later been taken down. But who cares, right? Because shilling for Israel. But here's my point. Here's the same guy, Avi Yemeni, saying ceasefire now. It's just embarrassing. But of course, you're going to get all the same Zionist people down there going, yeah, because they want to pretend it's just a couple of Hamas terrorists and everyone's lying about what's going on. And of course, here's Ezra Levant, the leader of the rebel group, saying outrageous crime against humanity, talking about the attack, saying heartbreaking grief for the victims, unacceptable violence against innocent civilians for political religious ends. Again, how in the world do you guys think you already know all of this? Even the statements coming from the people they've arrested don't align up with what you're pressing. It could, but why don't we recognize that there are people like this, and some of you do, that will come out and just agree, and this is what I mean about the partisan media. Maybe they don't even realize it, but they'll grab on to that side and go, oh, perfect. This is my example of the religious thing that we see coming, even though we don't know that for sure, because one group claimed it. And we did. Again, how many times have we seen that already happen, where it turns out that ISIS wasn't even involved? again, and even further back, that we can literally prove that it is a proxy army created by Israel and the United States. And I'll include, I actually have to remember to open it, Ben Swan's documentary as well, but the version, the three-part documentary that James Corbett put together. I mean, it's just, it's one of these things that if you have not seen that, if you watch all of that, there's nothing, because everything in there is cited and sourced. He's got all the links to directly, the direct documentation from the U.S. government, from the Israeli government. It's unbelievably obvious, proving with receipts that they are behind this. And even myself, when I rewatched it with our watch along, and I've seen them all, I'm just going, my God, I can't believe this is out there and we still pretend we don't know this. But here's what he finishes with, barbarism. And he goes, but unlike Lavrov in Russia, one of the Russian representatives, I will not demand that they have a ceasefire with the terrorists. Nobody, anyway, it's the same point. And I'm so tired of having to engage with this kind of ignorance, like, and I mean willful ignorance, to argue that this is even remotely the same thing. The idea that this is the ceasefire has anything to do with Russia going after, with Israel going after Hamas. The ceasefire has to do with their belligerent murdering of innocent people in the claim that they're going after Hamas. But that these people either don't want to or can't wrap their mind around that is why I think they're bad people. That's my personal opinion. It is subjective, but it's one of those things these days that I'm just overwhelmed with how obvious that is. Now, the point is obvious. If you're literally going, they're Hamas, they're working with Hamas, there's the same ideology as Hamas, and it's the same concept. Ask yourself why Ezra Levant and all the rest of them can't acknowledge that Israel funded Hamas to be what they are. You could argue all day long that Hamas is, like, even if you want to argue that we shouldn't ceasefire because Hamas is bad, you should be blaming the Israeli government for allowing that, funding that, arming that into existence. And here's the Haaretz article, as always, saying anyone who wants to thwart the establishment of Palestinian state has to fund them. This is part of our strategy. And I'll play that clip again that I played in the beginning. Here's the Mossad, or the article from Haaretz, saying the Mossad chief was sent to Qatar. Don't forget, the leadership is protected in Qatar right now that they're not going after. And they're even using them in their negotiations. I mean, guys, this is a protected asset to continue funding Hamas. And I'll play the clip again. One of their former representatives, he's literally telling you that they sent $1.4 billion in suitcases, cash. And, oh, it's for humanitarian aid, is it? Where exactly are they supposed to buy aid inside of the open-air prison that is Gaza? Because realize the reason they're sending aid in 500 trucks plus a day before October 7th, which they're not even close to meeting now while claiming they're doing everything. The reason aid came in is because there wasn't something there they could just purchase or get. That's the point. So when you realize that they gave them cash and now they're finding all this cash they claim because, look, that proves that Al-Shifa and all this stuff. Even if that was the case that it was there, how do you not realize where that cash came from? And it's not because UNRWA handed them cash to buy food with, which is actually how stupid their claim is. They are funding the very thing that they claim they're fighting today. That is important to understand.
So are you saying Benjamin Netanyahu deliberately boosted Hamas to try to prevent a Palestinian state?
Yeah, sure. He deliberately and systematically even told, is on record, whoever wants to avoid the threat of a two-state solution has to support my policy of paying protection money to the Hamas.
So what we did, with the permission of our prime minister, is to let Qatar to transfer a huge amount of money in cash, probably more than $1.4 billion. By doing it, we increase the power of Hamas.
It's very clear. Very, very, very clear. And by the way, that was the former head of Shin Bet, like their FBI, not some random person. Now, that being said, just the understanding that they're all very clearly trying, I shouldn't say all, but the ones we referenced and a lot of the people online for the Israeli side of this are really aggressively trying to connect Hamas to this. They're trying to connect that with the minds of Republicans saying they're also coming to your border. Like, they're really trying to build this idea that Israel's not killing civilians. They're waging a war for you against the bad Islamists in the world. And that's, you know, like the Laura Loomer madness and willful ignorance of the world screaming over the top. It's all about the bad Islam. Well, there are clearly bad entities in this concept. There's bad entities in pretty much any kind of extremist concept, including the Zionist concept, or you could even find pretty extreme Christian entities out there. Very extreme. But my point is that it's obvious that you're trying to overlap this with the groups that you have funded into reality. So that's the, so even if you want to argue, there really is a big threat of this massive Islam, you know, overwhelming, you know, whatever they're trying to paint it as, which I don't even think is the reality, other than some examples. They are responsible for that. That was one of the most important points that I thought Dave Smith made in that, if you want to call it a debate, where he absolutely destroyed Laura Loomer, was the same point that they funded the most extreme elements and then turned around and act like they were fighting them and used them to infiltrate other countries. So as that point, and this is ex-girl was the one that planted this thought in my mind, which I think is actually spot on. She says, ISIS's attack on Moscow or whatever actually happened, this is just the narrative out there today, is convenient timing and beneficial to Israel. And in an attempt to justify continuing weapons and support to Netanyahu, in his speech to Congress tomorrow, she argues he will cite ISIS and the attack, falsely equate it to Hamas, and claim that Israel's fighting to protect the West from these groups, ISIS, Hamas, and all of it, which is really obvious, right? I mean, I think that's obviously an important point. Here's actually a good clip by Revolutionary Blackout Network as well, just kind of highlighting the most absurd points about all of this. You know, pretty much what we pointed out yesterday, and I'll go through most of it, but I just want to point that out. And, oh, that's right. And I forgot about this clip, actually. And I think I should play that real quick. Because we're going to, this right now, we're going to quickly go over the Israel part, which again, as I said to start, actually, I'll do this. I actually am of the mind at this point, the evidence largely more so suggests CIA, Ukraine at behind this. But again, like I said at the beginning, that in my mind would still implicate Israel because of all these connections. But the evidence is pointing in a clear direction right now. But so that's why I'll go mostly over the Ukraine connections. But I wanted to at least go over this one part with Israel and around the connections to ISIS and so on. So we don't forget that. Let me grab this real quick and I'll play this clip because this is actually important. This is something that was even cited by Torah Judaism. And I look, you know, by the way, it looks like they deleted that tweet. Maybe they got a lot of pushback for that because they came out hot and were like, the Zionists are behind this. And maybe they, and I would agree that it's a little bit jumping the gun. I think that's probably a logical assumption, but I would argue that nobody would know that for sure just yet. Right. So I think that's why they probably deleted it. So here is the important clip that this guy, and I believe this was a member of the Likud party, is member of the Likud party, and he's speaking with RT about, I think, a week or more after October 7th. And I mean, and he's just saying, you are going to pay the price. And the guy's like, what? Like, you know, and he's talking about directly, like, anybody not supporting our narrative is going to pay the price. And he goes so hot with this. And it really does make you think that he's threatening. But he's just one individual, but he is part of their government.
That I understand you are on the Russian payroll, and I understand this is a Russian propaganda, but you have to be very careful, because let me tell you, we're going to finish this war. We're going to win because we're stronger. After this, Russia will pay the price. Believe me, Russia will pay the price. Russia is supporting the enemies of Israel. Russia is supporting Nazi people who want to commit genocide on us, and just Russia will pay the price. Russia.
Doesn't that alone suggest that there's at least motive, right? The idea that he's saying that you're supporting our enemies. Like, well, by U.S. standards, that's enough to attack somebody. I mean, literally, that's what they've argued about the supporting of terrorism, right? That's the exact same argument. So right there, like in a court of law, based on the way, you know, I think you could make a fair argument that there's at least motive to take this kind of action, or at the very least, drive the Ukraine or allow Ukraine around the United States to do this. Because there's an interesting point is made here, which I'll wait to get there, about the idea that somebody suggests the U.S. saw this coming, which is why they warned about it, because they're getting frustrated with Ukraine acting out without their knowledge, like without their like allowance, essentially, which is hurting their agendas elsewhere. Interesting dynamic. And this is what I was talking about earlier, where it's not always just all together. It's always, you know, that there's even amongst these groups working together, there's vying agendas. Right. And I think that's interesting. So right here, I think is important to consider that the very least motive to want to allow something like this or even drive it into reality to create the justification to get like the other person said, create funding, like they're fighting everywhere. And that you can, you know, there's a lot of overlaps, but motive, I think, is the easy point.
Also, now let me listen to me very carefully. We are going to finish with these Nazis. We're going to win this war. It's going to take the time it's going to take, but we're going to win this war. Afterwards, we're not forgetting what you are doing. We're not forgetting. We will come. We will make sure that Ukraine wins. We will make sure that you pay the price for what you have done.
I mean, what? I mean, this is the thing I said last time. What does he mean by that? In what way? Politically? So you're going to literally, in a weaponized way, go after? I mean, that even that is a threat, and even that shouldn't be just ignored. So, but very well could be more than that. But I think even that alone, just the idea that you're openly saying you'll pay the price, we'll come after you when we're done with this. That's pretty crazy.
You as Russia, and you and as all the enemies of Israel, and you as all the people who are now making everything they can to support genocide of the Jews in Israel. We are not forgetting. We are not forgetting. Remember exactly what I'm saying now. You will pay the price.
Amir, I think it's safe to say that this is a very passionate conflict that is happening here.
Well, people have been massacred. My people has been slaughtered by your proxies, and you will pay the price. Is it clear? Believe me, you will regret this day.
No, I don't actually think it is clear.
Very, very, very sternly.
I don't think it is clear, Mr. Weichmann, and I think, and I would suggest,
then it should be clear.
Future,
it should be clear.
As being a politician, as being a politician,
it should be clear to you, because you have to understand that actions have got consequences. And when people support murder of Jews, people pay the price. This is true in Gaza. This is true everywhere else. The time that Jews actually have no power to defend themselves is done, is gone. And people will now have to bear the consequences of them supporting genocidal Nazis who are out to exterminate Jews.
So your argument is that Jews before this have never had the ability to defend themselves, that now you're going to, that's over. I mean, it's just, that's completely baseless. In fact, you've gotten overwhelming military support from the US for a very long time. And it's just so embarrassing that these arguments keep getting thrown forward. Like you must think that he doesn't believe that. Like, I mean, some of these points he's making, like, I believe he probably genuinely, he's you know, wrapped into his identity that he believes he's being threatened and attacked by every sneer and every, except we're talking about the Israeli government. But to argue that you've always been insecure, that nobody's in your, like, the idea that, like, nobody is supporting the Jewish community, or that literally there are, that everyone's against you, like Elon Levy could say, that we've never had a safe place, never in the world, except literally all these countries have weaponized even words against people that want to call out the governments of Israel. Like, how is that not overwhelming support? In any case, it's just this person is threatening because we're going to come back and get you after this.
What we have seen 10 days ago is not something normal. We have seen these Nazis going out, massacring people in the streets, babies, beheading them.
All the lies.
Older people, women, raping, all these things. You've seen them with your eyes.
No, you haven't. You know, you can maybe let him slide for repeating the narratives because he maybe doesn't know any better that they're lies, but saying they're seeing him with their eyes, he's lying. We know he's lying. And there you go.
How can you even dare to support the murderers? I tell you frankly, the public opinion in Israel has changed. We are not now where we were 10 days ago.
The truth is, that's true, but it's changed against them. And that's becoming very, very apparent. Now, all that is important. But I will quickly go over some of the things that I think are important for the Israel conversation. And here, as he's screaming, everybody else is Nazis, let's make sure we realize they're literally supporting the groups that he's pointing to and other variations of ISIS and Al-Qaeda and also the Nazis in Ukraine, because that's how stupid this is. But what's interesting is this is what she was referencing today. In fact, Republican House Speaker says he'll invite Netanyahu to address Congress. Oh, did you see that? See, it just went to paywall. It wasn't on paywall before. Isn't that strange? I think there's a timer on these things. We got the back way back. I don't think there's much I want to show you, but just, oh, that's interesting. Usually there's something there. Okay. One more try, and then I guess we'll just skip it. Nope, there we go. Wayback machine worked. So, the point on this article is that he's inviting him to speak. And I think it's interesting because the way he's framing it is, it's like this is like unique or almost unprecedented. It's not. I mean, Netanyahu has been invited to speak at the Congress before in belligerent and dangerous ways many times. But what's interesting to me is, where else does this happen? When's the last time you saw any other foreign leader speak at U.S. Congress? I mean, I'm sure it's happened before, but it's very rare. But Israel, there's a constant action here. And they come, the last time, one of the most prominent ones actually was when he came and didn't even, there wasn't even made public to other other members of Congress and their executive branch. And he just came up and spoke to Congress. But it says Mike Johnson, the Republican Speaker of the House, says on Thursday he plans to invite Benjamin Netanyahu. And this is to speak before Congress. The comments come a week after Chuck Schumer, the Democratic Senate leader, called for elections in Israel. Said, I'd love to have him come and address the joint session of Congress. We'll certainly extend that invitation. So we'll have to see ultimately what happens. But mark my words, I agree with what you're saying. I think this is how this is going to go. And it's going to be all about pushing this narrative. And Celestial Lama says, curious that ISIS chooses to attack Russia and not Israel in the current political circumstances. Think about that. So the argument is that Hamas and ISIS are the same thing. Right? Okay. And Israel's waging a massive war on Hamas. And their entities goes after Russia, even though Russia, as Rebel News says, is supporting Hamas. Don't we stand back and go, well, that's just dumb. Like, how does that even logically make sense? It says, come to think of it, when's the last time they ever attacked Israel? As far as I know, never. Now, there was one time where they tried to make that seem like that's what happened, but it was actually in the Golan Heights, and I'll show you that next. Where they apologized and said, oops, sorry, Israel, we didn't know you were there. Whatever ISIS actually is, and that very well we don't even know. But my point is that this doesn't make any sense based on logic. Why would they go after Russia if the groups that are after Hamas, US, Israel, whatever, none of that, but while Russia's arguably supporting the Palestinians, it doesn't make much sense other than it is just what you might be thinking, that it's actually an entity that's used by the very people that are pretending they're fighting that entity. That's the reality about the history here. Now, this is an article from Whitney Webb back in 2017, and you've seen this around. I like her work on this because she cites her sources, and it's a good article. Israeli website claims ISIS commander revealed as Mossad agent. Not surprising. Here's just Iran citing that they believe is Mossad created ISIS. But of course, because Iran said it, people will dismiss it. I don't know why you should consider it like anything else. Here's Censored Man pointing out the point we just were talking about. And I'll show you more about that. He says, have you ever heard of a group of Islamic terrorists who claim their goal is to establish an Islamic caliphate, apologize to the state responsible for all the destabilization in the Middle East? Weird, right? Yeah. And here's that clip, by the way, where the C-SPAN clip, where he's talking about the fact that he found out the real name for Mossad is the Israeli Secret Intelligence Services, which stands for, the acronym is ISIS. But either way, it's an article saying Greater Israel 1982 plan for Mideast Empire aided by ISIS, but that's a small paper. My point is the claim he's making, because that's true. Here's Newsweek. ISIS fighters regret attacking Israel and have apologized, says former defense minister. Isn't that the stupidest thing ever? I mean, how do you not laugh about that? And it says down here, fighters loyal to the Islamic State militant group, ISIS, whatever that actually is, have apologized for launching an attack on Israeli forces last year in the Golan Heights region. See, up here, it's attacking Israel. People take that as they attacked Israel. The point is, it's very clear that they attacked in the Syrian area or whoever is actually behind that and then apologized publicly to Israel. I don't even know I don't even know why in any sense that makes sense. So if it's actually just ISIS, why would they apologize to the group that has a mission of taking them out? It's publicly anyway. If it wasn't ISIS, then why would they apologize, making it clear to everybody that they weren't working? Doesn't that seem stupid? The whole point is you're supposed to argue that you're at threat from the bad terrorists, right? So I don't even know why that makes. Maybe we're now seeing, or this is an example of what we're now seeing today. The kind of just not thought through clumsy propaganda from the Israeli government. But in any case, it doesn't make sense that ISIS would apologize for accidentally bombing Israel in the Golan Heights, which, by the way, is a place they illegally occupy. But I wanted to add this, and here's the documentary if you want to read it. I said, if you're wondering why some say with such certainty that ISIS is a proxy army of the U.S. and Israel, and you've not watched this outstanding series, then definitely start here. False Flags, A Secret History of Al-Qaeda. Here is Times of Israel from 2019. IDF chief finally acknowledges that Israel supplied weapons to the Syrian rebels. Now, this overlaps. We're going to get into the Syrian part of it as well, but the point is the Syrian rebels are this is where the group right now arguably is, where we can prove that one of the people they have caught was part of this entity, was working in Idlib against the Syrian government and was being supplied weapons by Israel. Right there is an easy connection between one of the guys that they're claiming was caught. I'm not going to say we even know he was part of it, but that they have caught and that has now been roundly acknowledged as one of the people is somebody you can trace right back to working with Syrian rebels, you know, the terrorists that are funded by Israel and the United States and armed by Israel. So couldn't you stand back and say, well, maybe Israel took one of these assets that they were arming back then and put them over, you know, so of course you could. But I'm not kind of like Rebel News, not going to say that we know for sure because it aligns with what I think is happening. I will simply tell you that the evidence points in that direction and you can come to your own conclusions about it. But damn it, if that's not very damning, and we'll get into the Syria part next. Here's another one from anti-war, Israeli intel chief. We don't want ISIS defeated in Syria. Same point in a different angle. So you're arming them. You're supporting them. You're protecting them. And we've already shown you in the past, even the United States government has been caught shuttling them around, their families. But now he's saying we don't want them defeated. And it's very clear. It says the Israel's longstanding position that it prefers ISIS over the Syrian government. Now, you could take that as the simplest part, that it has nothing to do with their funding or support or behind it. That they just like that extreme entity better because it's easier to control. And they don't like Assad's stance on Israel. So they lean into it. But my point is, way before that, we can prove that they were already funding them. And ultimately, this was a group that they were already utilizing. And this is this them trying to, you know, again, I would argue either way you look at it, why would they say that out loud? I honestly don't know. But regardless, it's very clear they're letting you know that they support them at the very least and have armed them at the very least. Here is a Cradle article from 2022. New batch of ex-ISIS members, whatever that means, transferred from Syria to Ukraine. Okay, so now here's your connection just in a general sense on the surface public level of the conversation. And this is roundly reported. This was all over the place. We talked about this a while ago. Anyway, the point was, we proved that there were ex-ISIS members that Zelensky literally that even spoke about this, moving some of these rebels from, and that's how they framed it, from Syria to Ukraine, you know, to help fight the bad guy Russia. Now, who were those rebels? The same ones we're talking about here. And the same group, same location that we're going to connect right now back to what happened in Russia just yesterday. And then go, of course, right there. Don't forget that you can show on both sides of it that Israel was arming and funding the groups that are in Syria. And here's the example I've shown you many times where the Israeli government was already funding the extremists in Ukraine. So it's not hard to see how this could overlap, whether or not Ukraine acted of their own accord. This is the article, Rights Groups Demand Israel Stop Arming Neo-Nazis in Ukraine. And that was the Azov movement that it's in control now. That was 2018. And I always say this, it's like, if that's confusing to you, it's because you don't understand the true origins of Zionism, which is what Israel really is. And the point is that they have a history of working with the Nazi organ or Nazi groups going back as far as you look, as far, you know, as they've existed. And that's provable. And Dan Cohen even might pop up. This new browser again, I forget these links don't always pop up super fast. Let's see. Not seeing it. In any case, the point was that you can prove this, and I've done whole shows about this, that the Zionist, again, you can look it up on Wikipedia, not that that means it's provable, but that it's mass adoption, that Zionists were trying to align themselves with Nazi Germany and even Stalin at one point for it to create a fascist entity. And that was even after the final solution had begun. And the argument is that that's why Israel was created, even though they were working with that group while it was happening. The point is, people don't understand the reality, and this is obviously makes sense, but that's not the point for today. The point is simply, they were arming the neo-Nazis in Ukraine and arming the moderate rebels in Syria. Now here, Maria Dubovikova, and this is she writes in her bio, a prominent independent analyst and media expert in the Russian Orthodox, Christian, Al-Arabia, all the different citations there. Now she says, the U.S. is pushing the narrative so forcefully, which, by the way, is usually an indication that there's something to be suspicious about. Not always, but consider that. But they're pushing the narrative so forcefully that ISIS is behind the terrorist attack in Moscow that I feel compelled to remind the White House of the following. President of Ukraine, Zelensky, is attempting to recruit ISIS fighters from Iraq and Syria prisons via the U.S., which is where the initiative originates. To join the armed forces of Ukraine. Now, we were just referencing that. It's a public conversation that many people have discussed. Now, of course, the difference is they're claiming they're rebels, whereas one side and we know what these are. Even Obama was forced to admit that there's no such thing as a moderate rebel. They were extremists. And in fact, they were way crazier than the ones they claimed they were fighting. That's usually how this works. They like the group that's willing to do whatever they need, whenever they need it, for any, as long as you support them financially and let them kill people. Otherwise, you have a group that's saying, well, we care about people. We want to feed them. And we, that's not what the U.S. government wants. They want to exploit these areas for their benefit at everybody else's expense. And if you think I'm wrong, look at history, guys. Look at how Libya ended up. How did Iraq end up? What are they doing for these people? Did they liberate them? Did they make it all a bastion of freedom? No, they said, we're going to save Libya from the bad guys, then let the bad guys take it over with open slave markets, and walked away. The point here, going forward, she says, furthermore, recently a Syrian parliamentarian, Jodiah Mikhail Talja, also reported that the USA is orchestrating a plan to free thousands of ISIS terrorists from American detention facilities in Syria in an effort to resurrect the terrorist organization. Now, this is an interesting overlap, actually, with the Afghanistan discussion of ISIS-K, that apparently was a group that seemingly vanished. And I think it might have been the actual case that whether it was even there, that it sort of just disappeared and is now just a catch-all for their arguments. But the point is that it weirdly started to resurge when the moment that Biden pulled out of Afghanistan. So certainly could just be what happened, or it could be the way this narrative was manufactured to plan the building up of the thing again that you want to point out to justify the actions that you have had planned for years. Interesting. Then she says, beneath the veneer of any global evil, one inevitably uncovers the Star-Spangled Flag. And that shouldn't be taken as an attack on Americans, guys, even though that's how it is made, that we're supposed to perceive this is, the point is that that's an attack on the American government. Because the truth, guys, they're the ones acting in your name and pretending they're doing good things while the world sees through them every day. But here's a clip that I think is important. Just to bring this right back to Ukraine and the overlap of Syria, ISIS, and all of it, that we already talked about this. This is Lord Bibo posting it again today. But that I think it was BBC or one of these mainstream outlets. And we saw many examples of this, even the one where they were given the Nazi salute in front of the crowd at the street. But this is where they had ISIS patches on their uniforms. And we can't acknowledge that. Like, how embarrassing that there's examples like this. Are more often than they're more often today than used to be, but where it's, we must take a moment to acknowledge that that's embarrassing. That means that they knew that, or at the very least, they saw it after the fact and just never acknowledged it. Like, so you have an entire narrative built on that we're wrong about the fact that these guys are extremists, and yet you just ignore that or clip it out of your coverage later on YouTube. Yeah, that's what actually happens, which means they're not real journalists. This is, which I don't need to convince you guys of that, but somebody probably does. So here's the example. This is real. It's Ukraine. Multiple examples of them being caught with ISIS patches. Associated Press. And I showed you all these. I think that one right there, remember, that was on CNN. And are we really going to pretend that they didn't know that, or at the very least find out after the fact? And if they did, and then not say anything about it? That's crazy. Right. So, yeah, it's obvious that these groups, right there is the best case to make this clear, that that means that without question, Israel and the United States are funding ISIS, period. Because they're in Ukraine using U.S. weapons, Israeli funding, Israeli weapons, which is probably the same thing, to carry out their war against Russia. And they're either working with ISIS or they are, whatever that means. It's just not, it's be very easy to see. And then she cites the article we were reading from the Cradle, saying that since early March, the Foreign Intelligence Service of Russia has issued warnings that the U.S. and NATO are providing ISIS fighters from Syria with special training at the Al-Tanf military base, which we've been saying for years because it's easy to prove. So going into a great thread from Freddie Pontone about this exact overlap, the idea that these people, the connection from Ukraine, Syria, and all the rest. So he says, Russia, Crocus shooting. The Crocus terrorists were arrested close to the Ukrainian border. Now, and we're going to get into all that, by the way. I wanted to start with this because I feel like it's important to really fully understand a lot of this context before we see what Putin is saying and the people that are caught. The latter half, which we'll get into, and this shouldn't be that long of a show today. We're going to get into what Putin said, the videos of the people they caught, and so on, and compare some of this stuff. But so here are some of the images of one of these people we're talking about, and I'll show you just really quickly. You got these images that they're going to show you. God, Twitter's so bad today. It's going to start circling. Yep. So this guy, and then that guy there, and then this guy. And there's I think there's actually four of them you can see. I'll show you the images. But so these are people we're talking about. They're claiming they caught, and what they're saying, I'm not really taking at face value at this point, and I'll show you why. But here's what he says. The terrorists were showing they were arrested close to the Ukrainian border as they were attempting to flee to Ukraine. And that's at least what Russia is claiming. And I think it's very clear that's what's going on here, to regroup with the man believed to be their leader. And this is what the narrative is. This is one of the people that they claim, it's this guy right here, I believe, who was killed a while ago. And I'll read it directly from their documentation. Now it says the recently documented presence of ISIL terrorist leader Abdul Hakim Shishani, whose real name is Rustam Ashiv, who's with known ties to the United States. In fact, I'll show you directly from the Wikipedia page, for crying out loud, that says that he was a regular at a U.S. airbase. It's just like ridiculous stuff. It says, and especially to the Radio Svoboda, which is not surprising at all. There's your propaganda level right there. That's the Michael Abed Operation Aerodynamic concept, where they literally bring in extremists to manipulate people through media, even in the United States. But it says, to say the least, and that statement saying that it's especially that they're working with U.S. overlaps, to say the least. And it says Shishani is believed to have been in command of the Ukrainian operation against Russian Belgorod and its presence in Ukraine. The leader of the ISIS-K group, they're saying, is responsible for this attack, was working directly with U.S. overlaps and propaganda media that they're running, and is apparently behind one of these U.S.-backed operations against Russia previously. And it says, and participation in the Belgorod operation raises serious questions. The photos below, which I'll show you next, show him and one of the leaders, whose group includes fugitive bandits of CIS. And the right photo was taken on the border. This one here. And near Belgorod region during the attack that took place a few days ago. Now, so Shishani has been in Ukraine for a long time and not in Syria, as some media have reported. He is, but has come and worked and fought in Syria, which he also proves. But it's saying he's been in Ukraine a lot longer than they're arguing. And I think that's in order to obfuscate that they've been supporting him in Ukraine this whole time, to make it more about the Syrian bad guy terrorist and align that with, you know, probably Assad and whatever else, with no evidence whatsoever. And it says he is the link between the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine and the radical militants whom he commanded in Syria. Think about that. So we're talking about one of these entities that was a leader of their terrorist groups in Syria to use against whoever they want, including civilians from all sorts of areas, but specifically the Assad government. And now they've just simply moved him, which, by the way, we just showed you them moving their assets to Ukraine. We showed you them arming these people on both sides of that. And now he's apparently, or was apparently, working in operations for Ukrainian military, and now is literally they're at least claiming caught for this, carry on this attack. I mean, it's things like that that are transparent connections. Like we're talking about with the Azov movement and the CIA funding, and then what happens in the Rise Above movement in Charlottesville, who was literally the U.S. arm of the Azov movement. And we can't connect those dots, you know? And again, what's important is to realize is that this is where these partisan manipulators step in. Like when Laura Loomer pretended she discovered all this and tried to obfuscate the obvious Israeli involvement in it. And that's how that stuff works. And I think the reason she did that right before all this really blew up was for this very reason, guys. I really believe that, to kind of just try to push out that part of the conversation. Didn't work. But it says the group is known for operating with was funded by the United States and Britain, along with the so-called moderate groups. That's the Syrian point. I mean, this is provable information. They've admitted to funding these groups. Now, he moved from the Idlib province, situated in northwestern Syria. Vanessa Bailey and I have had many conversations about what that really is. It's just a terrorist hotbed that they've allowed to be there. Even Brett McGurk in the past has made that statement, and we can prove the U.S. government is just allowing that. And it says where he led an independent Islamist terrorist gang to their doom. He says, according to the Russians, following the defeat of ISIL terrorists in Syria, Shishani entered the service of the Ukrainian military, offering his skills and network to the defense ministry of the Ministry of Defense in Ukraine. He is believed to be working as a special agent for the Islamist terrorist ISIL and was appointed as a colonel of the Secret Service of the so-called Chechen Republic of Ichkeria and deputy commander of its battalions, which was formed in Ukraine and fight against the Russians. Now, this is my point about, does it even exist? So you can clearly argue this is a person who is in ISIS or ISIL, and maybe he actually even says that and believes that. But my point is that ISIL or ISIS? Or is this an obvious entity that's being funded and jumped around by groups like the United States and Israel? So you could really say both. I mean, it exists because he's there and they're real people, but it's not what we argue it is. They're just these cutouts, that people that get shuffled around, and they use these terms selectively. Interesting. Now it says they're involved with the Crocus, the terrorists involved with the Crocus concert shooting were reported to have had false beards. Now, I haven't confirmed that. It's just a statement, this a report circulating. Eyewitnesses told this platform special correspondent that they had false beards. And this could indicate that it's an attack that was not carried out by Afghan or Arab Islamists. But that's just a statement. And by the people they've arrested, it seems that's not the case. But can keep that in mind for if it ends up these aren't even the people that that were actually there. And I have a point about that. If it turns out that the Chechnyan-Ukrainian trace of ISIL is behind the Crocus terror attack, there is no doubt Putin's reaction will be harsh and relentless. Now he says, who is Abdul Hakim al-Shashini, or the Ashiv actual name? Abdul Shashini is a Chechnyan commander and former leader of, in English, the soldiers of the Caucasus, or from where the actually where the word Caucasian comes from, the location. And he said, or AK is what the actual abbreviation for the terrorist group is, or specifically a whatever they're calling this. AK is a Chechen militant group based in the forests of Latakia, Syria, and was one of three groups, including the Soldiers of Syria and the much smaller Tarkhan's Jamaat, fighting against Russian forces in the Northern Caucasus. So you can already see that this person was already in on the side of what they call the moderate rebels and clearly fighting against Russia previously. So interesting that they're in, he's in completely different fields of war, but still being aimed at the same entity. Why? Why are they aimed at Syria? Or, I mean, at Russia, when Russia's defending Syria? Because this is what they're funding these groups and aiming at who they want. As a, that's my opinion, but I think we've proven that in a general sense more than once. As of October 2022, he says al-Shashani is serving as the deputy of the Chechen government in exile and has joined the ranks of the Chechen militants in Ukraine's fight against Russian forces. Don't forget, right in the beginning, the Chechen militants were the ones that posted that video of them dipping their bullets in pig fat and saying they were using these to kill Muslims, and nobody cared about that. And it says, 1981, born in Chechen Republic, lives in Ukraine with Russian citizenship. Now, al-Shashani, and this is the whole overlap game they play, I think, where they try to, you know, that's the whole, like, what's the term I used for it? You know, the Azov movement overlap on January 6th. We're trying to create the dynamic where it was Russia influencing the U.S. with white supremacy, and it turned out to be a whole ploy done by Ukraine and the United States. But al-Shashani previously served in the Chechen-Russian War, 1990s, according to media sources. Now, this goes into more depth about specifically the background in Chechnya and so on. I want to, just for time, I want to make sure we stick to the current points. Which all this is relevant, though. Make sure you read this. He does a great job on this. Now, he says he never pledged allegiance to the Caucasus Emirate. Media sources reported he claimed he would fight alongside the group if he were to return to Chechnya. By late 2012, he joined other fighters in Syria, battling the Assad. That's the point. Eventually became the commander of this AK group, which is the one we're talking about today. A group, but in this context, not the specific ISIS-K group, but this group. The Soldiers of Caucasus, or IK, that's the group that he led, the Chechen militants. Where were we? And it says, a group that originally operated under the command of the Syrian Islamist faction, Asnar al-Sham. Let's see. And then, yes, they include the hardline groups, basically operated within alongside the groups such as al-Nusra Front, which, again, Vanessa Billion and I have talked about, and she's talked about many times. It's very clearly a group that is extreme as it gets, and the groups that, in fact, were the ones cutting heads off and so on, that they then pretended were. It's so overwhelmingly obvious that these groups are funded and backed by the groups we're talking about, specifically Israel and the United States. And they're the ones doing some of the most grotesque things we've talked about over the years. And, of course, along the Turkestan Islamic Party. And it says, but unlike other Chechen groups, they have never had a relationship with ISIS. Turkey connections. I think the main point for me on, like, all these different aliases, what does that tell you? I mean, you know, these, that's not usually a hallmark of somebody who believes in what they're doing. That's a hallmark of an agent. Lastly, he says, Abdul Hakim al-Shashani with the Ukraine Armed Forces during an operation in Donbass. You know, when they're ethnically cleansing people, and you can see them. These are the people, you know, with their bands on and stuff. There's one of them right there. Which one specifically, the guy he's referencing. So our point is, you can see these people in specifically the operations we know are war crimes. What's going on with Donbass is just ongoing ethnic cleansing. And whether that means he cares about it or not, or just being paid to do a job, who knows? In March and April 2023, the 3rd Battalion of the International Legion for the Defense of Ukraine, as well as several teams from the 1st Battalion, took part in the defense of Bakhmut. It is still considered today as one of the most grueling battles since the start of the war, and this is where you find Abdul Hakim al-Shushani. The Crocus terrorists were military trained and quite possibly recruited within the International Legion for the Defense of Ukraine, who is composed of 52 different nationalities. Finding fighters from the Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan, and this is interesting, the Tajikistan overlap, in their ranks wouldn't come as a surprise at all. These guys were not recruited via telegram in regard to what just happened in Russia. They were just told to say that, in his opinion, and I agree with this, in case they get caught. Anything to take the heat off Ukraine and the CIA. And he says, in my opinion, this is all going to come to light very soon. I believe that's happening today. And the point is that the Tajikistan overlap, I think, is important because that ties right back to ISIS-K and Afghanistan. When in reality, you can see that this group has been bouncing around, and whether they even believe this or are from there is questionable, especially the leader. And he says, the Foreign Intelligence Service of Ukraine enlisted Tajiks in the International Legion for the Defense of Ukraine, so I guess we're getting very close. Point being that even if you want to claim that they're genuinely from Tajikistan, that arguably that the people have already been enlisted to work for Ukraine. And so all of this, there's so many angles this overlaps and ties back to. But I argue we're still at the same point as yesterday, is that these are all data points. I don't think anybody provably knows just yet. Now here's Resistance News adding a point to this, saying breaking, terrorists from Moscow fled to Ukraine. Now these are points that have been put out by Russia, and I believe this is what's happening. And it says fled to Ukraine to the leader of the Syrian terrorists. And that's the person we're talking about. That's what Freddie Pontone was talking about. The photo shows Shoshani, one of the leaders of the Idlib radicals. And he writes, which I agree with, Israel, U.S.-backed rebels in Syria. I mean, that's a provable fact. In whose group bandits escaped from the CIS. And here's that same clip with the patches, right? The ISIS patches on the people in Ukraine. So immediately connect that with what we're talking about. And he goes on, the photo of the international commander of the militants was taken in the border zone near the Belgrade region during the attack that happened a few days ago. Shani has been in Ukraine for a long time, not in Syria, which again, that's being contradicted by the media because I think they're just towing the line they're given by the State Department, saying he's been in Syria this whole time. They want this to connect back to Islamist extremists, clearly. He says he is the link between the main intelligence directorate of the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense and the radical militants he commanded in Syria. It's even more interesting that this, quote, satanic gang was financed by the U.S., Britain, along with the so-called moderate groups. He says attempts to pretend that Ukraine had nothing to do with the terrorist attack in Crocus City Hall looks very pale against the background of the fact that the perpetrators of the terrorist attack were trying to escape to Ukraine to their patrons, which is what they're claiming now, the people that they stopped anyway. Now, again, I want to overlap this because we just talked about this yesterday. The overlapping point with ISIS-K, I think this is the most relevant point for me about how this connects. Specifically, the attack on Iran, the Kerman attack, that is ridiculous coming at a time when Israel was, and I'll make it even more clear, focusing on Iran and basically angling all this to be about Iran, which has gotten quiet lately. To a degree, but the whole big thing for them in the beginning was this is not Hamas, it's Iran. Iran's doing it all. Nikki Haley came out and said the same thing with no evidence. They just say, well, Hamas is Iran or whatever, but it's also Nazis and it's also ISIS. It's also whatever else we want to say it is, even though ISIS bombed Iran, because we're crazy and stupid. It's like everything is contradictory. We're not supposed to laugh about that because you're racist or anti-Semitic, right? It's impossible. You can't pretend that they're with ISIS and then ISIS attacks them or they're not. It's all contradictory. The point here, as I said, the tweet anyways, how many times exactly do we need to see ISIS attack the enemies of Israel at the peak of hostile rhetoric before we truly understand what we're seeing? The reason this overlap is important is because of this conversation. Syria connection, Tajikistan connection, ISIS-K, all the overlaps. Because here is what they're claiming about this attack in the 2024 Kerman bombings in Iran. Now it says on January 3rd, 2024, the commemorative ceremony marking the assassination of Soleimani, who, by the way, was assassinated by Israel and the United States, the United States in particular, at his grave in eastern Kerman, Iran, was attacked by two bomb explosions. The attacks killed at least 94 people, including 284. We don't really talk about that, do we? Because nobody seems to care if it's in Iran. But it says, according to Reuters, the United States intelligence community, same like today, concluded that the attack was perpetrated by ISIS-K. Interesting. Let's keep going. It says, the day before the bombings, an Israeli drone strike in Lebanon killed Hamas's deputy leader, they claim anyway. And then a week prior, the Israeli airstrike killed Iranian brigadier general in Syria. Isn't it interesting that you're seeing? So the day before and a week prior, you see all these actions, and we're not supposed to, you know, connect this. And that's while they're telling you that this is, that Iran is responsible, both in Lebanon and in Syria. And then randomly ISIS speaks up and attacks their enemy while they're aiming in that direction. Come on. I mean, it's flimsy at best. That's again, not even getting into the point that I'm pretty sure we can prove that Israel has absolutely openly supported ISIS. At the very least, ISIS is like, sorry, we didn't mean to attack you. So how does that make sense? It does, because they're at least, if it's real, they're attacking their enemies when they apologize for attacking them. But really, I think it comes down to the fact that this is not even really ISIS. It's just the cutout excuse. And that's my point about ISIS-K. I think that's the go-to. Now, it says the state news agency IRNA reported on January 4th that investigators suspected that the attackers were actually suicide bombers. And that's the point that I keep trying to make about this. If you really dig into this point, you'll find that it's almost always overlapped with a Israel, U.S., CIA, Mossad kind of, you know, that these suicide bombers always seem to come from some connection to these kind of conversations. And really, throughout history, you'll find that this became prominent post the Zionist creation of Israel. And I think what we're seeing is that this is a tactic used by liars. That's not to say that people aren't capable of doing that, or it hasn't happened in other cases, but I think this rise of it, and it always circles around what we end up finding out was actually them, I think that tells you something. But it says the dead included 23 students and 14 Afghan nationals. So that's interesting to me. It maybe means nothing, but the idea that you're saying this Afghani group that's fighting for Afghanistan didn't care that they were killing Afghanistan people doesn't make much sense to me, but who knows? And it says, on January 4th, the Islamic State claimed responsibility for the attack in a statement posted on Telegram. Start seeing a pattern here. It later released images on its news outlet, Amaq, showing two masked individuals whom it claimed were brothers who carried out the attack as suicide bombers. So exactly what's going on today. On the same outlet, Amaq, on their Telegram channel first, and then again, the suicide bombers point, I think is very interesting that it came out later, even though the news said otherwise, and they pushed in that point, because I think it's about making it about that. This is the kind of belligerent, you know, terrorist action. They're suicide bombers. They'll just kill themselves to kill you. And I think that's because that's the agenda to place that on them. Could be true. But it says, based on U.S. intelligence assessments, the attack was executed by the Afghanistan branch of the Islamic State, known as ISIS-K. The United States had warned Iran of the Islamic State attack prior to the bombings. I mean, guys, this is like exactly what just happened, except before. It says, with U.S. officials stating that the information was timely enough that they had enough details about the location to thwart it. As far as I know, that's not even real. And even Daily Mail said the same thing. U.S. secretly warned Iran that it was happening and they didn't even listen. Well, don't we ask why that's the damn exact same thing that's happening today? They warned and it turned out to happen. I think that's just shockingly stupid. But I think it's even the, I think it's really, really like a big red flag that, I mean, like every single point of the story is the same other than the location and the attack itself. The Telegram, the place it was posted, you know, the group that they claim responsibility for it, the fact that they warned them beforehand, I think that's crazy. Coincidences do happen, but that many, it's hard to see. It says, prior to Islamic State's claim of responsibility, the Iranian president blamed Israel for the attack and still maintains that to this day. Again, the only thing that we have to say that this was ISIS is that the U.S. claimed they knew that. Same thing today. Never presented evidence that I can see that proves any of that. But then the Quds Force commander also continues to say that this was the perpetrators, whoever they were, same like today, were simply supplied by the U.S. and the Zionist regime. Very similar to right now, I think. And it says, despite the Islamic State's claims of responsibility for the attacks, Iranian officials continue to accuse the United States and Israel of the involvement, with their military commanders saying that the group, quote, had disappeared, and that its members, quote, only act as mercenaries for American and Israeli interest on January 5th. Now, this is the point I was making before. Now, there's sources right there you can look into. The point is that you'll find the general conversation is that they say that this group just basically vanished. Now, that either suggests that it was never real to begin with, or that they just now use it because it's not something that will ever have pushback, because it's not real, or essentially has diminished And so it's just they move their people where they want. They carry the attack. They seed the Telegram channel. They put it out on the platform. And they go, hey, well, our intelligence says. And then everyone buys it. We never look further. Seems like a pretty easy cutout, doesn't it? Then it says authorities later arrested two people on the suspicion of providing support to the suspected suicide bombers and arrested a total of 35 people who were believed to have been involved in the attack. So the point is that they arrested people in Iran that they say were responsible, had nothing to do with ISIS-K, and nobody cared about that. Of course, because Iran must be lying or not, or they found the people, arrested them, put them in jail, and we don't care because the narrative is more important. Now it says one of the suicide bombers was identified as a citizen of Tajikistan. Now, I think this is interesting because there is an overlap of Tajikistan in regard to the rebels and the people they're funding in places not even connected to Afghanistan. But the Tajikistan point is important. I think they're pushing that, and I'll show you next from, or we'll come back to it. It's a little bit down the line, but they're claiming that Tajik fighters are an asset for the state, you know, Islamic K, even though that's Voice of America, which is a classic cutout propaganda platform. And that seems like an easy narrative to push to make this here. Then they point back at this article and say, see, that's how we know this all connects, when it might not even be even real. If not, it might just be them pointing to that name without it actually being there. Anyway, the point is they found one of them that turned out to be a citizen of Tajikistan, which is what they're claiming they're from. At least the people are claiming they're speaking as in these videos we'll show you. On January 11th, the Iranian Ministry of Intelligence said it had identified the mastermind of the attacks as a Tajikistani national known as, his alias, Abdallah Tajiki. Which, by the way, I didn't even remember to think about to look at that. Was it right here? The one, where was the one we, I'm asking you guys, where was that? I had the one here with the aliases. Where was that? Should I remember to look at that? Because it's interesting, right? What if it's one of the aliases that we're seeing? Where was that? Shoot. Oh, well, I don't want to waste any more time. Well, I had the point about the aliases. I'm curious to see if that lines up with that. In any case, a Tajikistani person. And it says, who, by the way, illegally entered Iran through its southeastern border. Sounds familiar. And manufactured bombs used in the attacks before leaving the country. And here's the point that I think is wildly important. Which, how much you want to bet Wikipedia edits this. It also identified one of the bombers as a 24-year-old Tajikistani and Israeli national, surnamed Bozrov, who was trained by the Islamic State in Afghanistan before entering Iran through its southeastern border. Or you can read that as the Islamic State in Afghanistan is not what we think it is, and they were trained in one of their you could think of this many different ways, but it's important to recognize an Israeli national was responsible for the bombing in Iran. And they're telling you that that means it's ISIS-K, but all of these narratives seem to fall flat when you dig into what ISIS-K really is. In any case, I think it's really interesting. It's the identical story, and it even turns out to be an Israeli national behind it. I don't know how we would ignore that. Now, as Che Bowens points out, and everyone makes this point, but it's very valid. Imagine the Russian embassy in New York or London just suddenly warning all Russians in the United States or London to stay away from concerts for a week before a presidential election. And then a week later, British and American men, women, and children are massacred at a concert. Imagine the headlines. I mean, it should be the way now. This should be like uncanny. How is it possible? And we're going to play a clip that make this make more sense. But I just think it's important to recognize how kind of absurd that is. It's certainly a possibility that they did just have intelligence. But then why did, as we'll point out later in a second, I pointed out yesterday, that's now become a prominent point in a lot of conversations. Why did Kirby act like that wasn't the case? Why did he act like we had no idea it was about to happen when you literally said it was about to happen? Either seems wildly clumsy or they just forgot. I don't even know. Here's the actual post if you want to read more. Oh, and I forgot this as well. This was the one we shared yesterday. This is just going, this connects with the Kerman bombing. It's a professor of Johns Hopkins who wrote on the January 3rd saying the Kerman blast is the second lethal blast at the Iranian military, the target there, along with the assassination of the general in Syria. And he just simply said it signals that Israel can hit Iran hard and its own country. And you know, so literally arguing that he just without even like batting an eye, it's Israel. Israel's responsible. That means they can do that. I agree. I think it's that self-evident, but think you can think for yourself. Now, we also had this article we talked about from The Insider, and this point was simple. There was an update as well, and I'll come back to this in a second, saying before the attack at the entrance of the Crocus City Hall, The frame of the metal detectors weirdly wasn't working, and the guard did not even check bags in the building. Very interesting. Now, we'll come back to that and what that might mean. But we talked about all the warnings. They all warned beforehand. And this point was it's just interesting to overlap. And this is about the attack in Moscow just before this, on March 7th, which was, interestingly enough, also arguably, they claimed it was ISIS-K, which should be very suspicious for you right now. And guess what it was aimed at, if you didn't see yesterday? A synagogue in Moscow. On January 7th, again, I made this point before, either it's a translation thing or it is, well, that's weird. It's either a translation thing. So this random art, this link just popped up. It was one of my videos. So the point was, that's either a translation issue or it is a typo, because it's March 7th they're talking about. And this is translated from Russian. So just that's what I'm positive of that, by the way. So on March 7th, they announced the prevention of a terrorist attack in a synagogue in Moscow, which was prepared by militants. And according to the officials, it was, and this is the other name for ISIS-K, it's a Vilayet Khorasan, which ISIS-K stands for that location, but otherwise also used with a W, Vilayet Khorasan, and saying that the international terrorist organization ISIS in Afghanistan, that's the same thing. So interesting that this attack right before that is also being led by these groups, whatever that group is. And it says this person was saying that all the overlaps are very similar, it's the same thing, saying that the way that this, he believes this attack was also the militants and the Molotov cocktails on the roof. And the last time these attacks took place in the same way with the same kind of training and the same group's claim and so on was, as we said the other day, San Bernardino. And that a lot of people argued that was a false flag. What I found interesting, as I said this before, was that group, that's why I included this to look, these people who were claimed or accused, one of the former NSA CIA contractors who spoke on the record here argued personally that he thinks it's a false flag and said that, in fact, he thinks because of the eyewitness testimony saying khakis and black tops, that he believes it was mercenaries from the Kraft International, a U.S. military contractor. That's his opinion. You guys can decide for yourselves. The point, though, is that if it wasn't these two, and eyewitnesses said it was basically, people that look like they're military contractors, then why? Where was it? Then why did that group, which, by the way, this is that stands for the group they're referencing in this article, which is the ISIS-K group or Islamic State or ISIL, saying that they spoke up and said those people are our supporters, basically claiming them in this attack, saying that they're responsible, we're responsible, which is how that ended up going. But it ultimately actually looks like something quite different. Now, here's the article from March 7th to show you that. So that's what it was. Russia says it neutralized ISIS cell plotting attack on Moscow synagogue. And this was the one arguing as well that Russia thwarted the ISIS-K plot that was supposed to trigger inter-religious discord, which very much sounds like the kind of agendas they're carrying out. And it just simply says they busted a bunch of Afghan-based ISIS-K terrorist cells on Thursday that was plotting to attack on a synagogue. And down here it says the incident could have also upset Russia's delicate Israel-Hamas balancing act if Tel Aviv exploited it as the pretext to send lethal arms to Ukraine and on a false basis that Moscow isn't doing enough to protect Jews. All of those seem like they're being argued right now, but not because of this one, but because of the next one carried out by the same group, interestingly enough. Well, I'll just also include the interesting overlap that this the guy that was alleged to be an Azerbaijani terrorist, remember I've made this point many times, but the evidence later showed he was actually not and was a Mossad asset that was arrested for trying to recruit people. And it's weirdly, after that came out, people stopped talking about it. I just think that's so ridiculously obvious. But here's where it gets the most interesting, is Wyatt Reed points out. For anyone wondering how the U.S. government could be so sure that ISIS-K carried out the massacre in Moscow, this should help. The leader of ISIS-K was a contractor at Bagram, a U.S. military base, then worked security for drug lord Rashid Dostum, a top CIA proxy. He later worked for Amrullah Salih, chief of the NDS, literally the CIA's right-hand man in Afghanistan. It's right there on his Wikipedia page, which I, hold on. I know for a fact that I opened it. I'm starting to wonder, I shouldn't even worry you guys with this, but there's some weird stuff with this browser. I feel like I keep losing tabs. One second. I wanted to, either way, I'll include it. We don't need to necessarily because it's just right there on the image. But as always, I don't want it to be Twitter file stuff. spell his name. Shahab. On. Sorry. Ah. There we go. Oh, I think I know what happened actually now. So let me just search for this real quick. I'll grab the Wikipedia page so you guys can use that to, as you want. Here we go. Okay. So here's the page itself. Now, I got to point out, by the way, this it's just crazy. It looks like an Oompa Loompa. That's just a funny point. The hairstyle is crazy. Here is the point he's making. And you know, the bottom line, I think, is the easiest one, is simply that he worked at a subcontractor at a security company and frequented the Bagram airfield. Isn't that crazy? It's under the Afghan Ministry of Defense, but this is controlled by the United States government. And the bottom line is you can very clearly see the CIA overlaps. And on top of that, apparently that this guy, was it killed? I think it's up. That ultimately they're saying that he died. See, I know I had this highlighted. I must have lost this somewhere. Saying, where was that? Dang it. Basically, the point is, you can search through it. I don't want to make you guys wait because I find it, that they're saying that he was killed, or that he was already killed, which I just find is funny because that seems to be a recurring thing with these assets they continue to use. When they want to, they can argue they're killed. There's not that much in there. I know it's in there somewhere. Frustrating. Anyway, okay, so the point overall is that the ISIS-K group that we've already broken down, as flimsy at best, and have direct overlap and influence by the groups we're talking about, and at the very least, the entities that we're about to get into that they're claiming are responsible are from Syria, Ukraine, the overlap to all of it, and continue to tie back to this group that I think is sort of a cutout today. Here is Alt-NOAA. Pretty big following, 133,000 followers, saying, this is Shahib al-Mujahar. He's the current known leader of ISIS-K. But again, this is somebody who's either not real, or he's somebody who they claim they've killed before and is either dead now and they're using him as that for that purpose, or he was not dead before. And that was, you know, the point is the inconsistent information. He is now to Russia what bin Laden was to the USA. So this person says, the man who authorized the terror attacks on Russian soil. He's not in Ukraine. Yes, he is. He has no sources in Ukraine. Yes, he does. He's in Afghanistan. No, he's not. And so this is the kind of game that's being played, right? And the point is, people down here say, stop lying. But while small in number, Tajik fighter is an asset for Islamic State Khorasan. This is the Voice of America point. And here is the Counter Extreme Project post about this person. And this is the point I made earlier, which so you can see it. It says, since the Taliban's takeover of Afghanistan in August 2021, right. You know, so what's funny about the Taliban, the group that they literally had negotiations with. So it wasn't really a takeover so much as a handing off of the keys. And really, the origin of this whole occupation of Afghanistan was argued about Taliban. And then you leave 20 years later by shaking the hand of the group you claim you were going there to stop. Obviously, it wasn't about the Taliban, but it says ISIS-K has become a prominent threat in the region after they left, when they removed themselves from the claim of removing themselves from Afghanistan in 2021. And the point is, what'd they do? Well, they left everything, didn't they? And now what we're hearing is, well, now suddenly there's a resurgence of this ISIS-K group because they left Afghanistan. Doesn't that become like a manufactured kind of narrative where they left them with all these weapons and material and money, and they just weirdly, they crane back up. And now these years later, now they're attacking everywhere and we're concerned, and Hamas and everyone's connected. Like, it's just, I feel this is a very transparent narrative. Launching a series of high casualty attacks against American nationals, the Taliban, and even Afghan groups, which doesn't make much sense when you argue the whole point of these groups is about fighting against the outsiders for their own territory. You know, it's the same thing they frame like with Assad about it. There's no real logic to it. He just likes to murder children, which certainly exists. I think we're seeing it happen in Israel, right, or Gaza right now. But either way, the point is that it's a rare concept to think that it's not with some kind of logic. People are just, they just like to murder whoever anywhere, including their own people, even though their stated, you know, objective is to save, you know, anyway, same point. It's transparent to me. Now, here's what Douglas McGregor says. The perpetrators of the terrorist attack in Russia escaped from Russia into Ukraine near Belgorod and are directly tied to Muslim elements fighting on behalf of the UA. And he says, were they originally ISIS or something else? He says, I have no idea, but there's little doubt that MI6 and CIA are involved. You know, Douglas McGregor does a lot of pull with certain parts of the paradigm. And so I think it's interesting that he's saying this, because right now a lot of the right-wing narratives are that this is, you know, how dare you suggest Israel is responsible? And if MI6 and CIA are using this, this is Israel's agenda, guys. This is exactly the same thing. So I think that's going to be interesting to see how that plays with certain media. But he says, talking solves nothing. We must take action. You know, and this comes to the point to where it's about, you know, the same thing, military action and so on. But it's interesting. Let's see how this is. We could be seeing a shifting of the guard kind of a thing, you know. But here, ignorance, the root of all stem of evil, says that's what got the White House scared to death. Oh, he's quoting what they said. Just a day ago, open source. I'm just going to play it. I don't want to read all that. So here's the clip that he played. Or they included, and this is them talking about this is with Judge Napolitano's show, and this guy, frustratingly enough, the subtitles on this cover up his name half the time, but he's an expert in the field they're talking about. And what he's arguing is that the fact that they knew ahead of time, in his opinion, because he used to do those kind of warnings for the government, that they knew. And this is where he explains that he thinks that it's because that Washington is getting angry that that Ukraine is acting without their permission, essentially, and that this might have been an attempt to, I don't know, stop the fallout.
I know that Ukraine did. And here's how we know. March 7th, the United States Embassy, Moscow, and the UK Embassy, Moscow, issue a warning to a travel advisory to all Americans and British citizens. Stay away. There's going to be a terrorist attack within 48 hours. Now, that didn't happen. But I used to be, that was my job. That was part of my job when I was state and counterterrorism. Those kinds of warnings are only issued when you have specific, credible information and cannot prevent the attack.
Yeah.
Now, and usually in those circumstances, if it had enough specificity and was solid, really solid, we would pass it off to, I don't know who that is. We would pass that information off to the other government and let them take action to prevent it. It wouldn't happen. But in this case, what we've had in the last day on Open Source Intelligence Defender, it's one of those Twitter channels, very much a part of the propaganda effort out of the CIA. They put out that the U.S. National Security Council and the White House becoming increasingly frustrated by, quote, unauthorized brazen actions, end quote, taken by Ukraine against Russia. So this means the United States knew that Ukraine had something in the pipeline. They knew what they had some idea what they're going to do. And the odds are that not only did Ukraine do it, but they did it with weapons and assistance provided by the United States.
Oh, boy.
That's what's got the White House scared to death.
Yeah, especially at a time when they've lost more support than ever because they're supporting the most obvious genocide we've ever seen. And I think that's the important part about this is, and remember I actually made this point because of how Ukraine feels like they're being, rather specifically, the Zelensky proxy element feel like they're being ignored because the focus is different as elsewhere right now. I made that point. How much you want to bet I'm worried they're going to act out in some crazy way because they're trying to get people to give them more money. Well, that may be what we're talking about here. Right? That's a very logical consideration. Now, here is what DD Geopolitics writes from Maria Zakharova. The main thing is that the American authorities do not forget how their information political environment, so the media, the propaganda media, and the MAMS, the mainstream alternative media, tied the terrorists who shot people in Moscow to the banned terrorist organization ISIS. Basically, simply saying the main thing is that they just connected these dots without real evidence, it seems. It says, now we know in which country these bloody, she says a bad word. I don't know how to abbreviate that for the, you know, people listening, for the children and everything. These bloody bad people plan to hide from persecution in Ukraine. Now it says the same country that with the hands of Western liberal regimes for 10 years have been turning into a center for the spread of terrorism in Europe, surpassing even Kosovo in extremist frenzy. And guys, that's the whole point about the idea of, well, all the way back to Operation Aerodynamic, but also the idea we talk about with the Azov movement and the vanilla ISIS conversation and seeding these dangerous things, January 6th. It was all an agenda. That was what Ukraine was being used for. it blew up in their face, really, as far as I could tell. Here is Scott Ritter giving you his opinion. And it says he's just given his take on Moscow. And he says that there's a lot of evidence pointing towards Ukraine and the CIA.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has finished delivering an address to the Russian nation about the horrible events that transpired yesterday at the Crocus City Hall and concert venue outside of Moscow. A terrible terrorist attack that has killed hundreds, and the death count is still being tallied. The president spoke forcefully. He spoke directly. He spoke about the resilience of the Russian people. He spoke about the absolute destiny of the perpetrators, the harsh justice that will be meted out to them. He also made a comment about how the attackers fled towards Ukraine. Now, the Russian president made it clear that there is an ongoing investigation and that the Russian intelligence and security services will get to the bottom of this. But let's talk about that aspect, that the attackers were fleeing towards Ukraine. You know, there has been some talk here in the United States. The U.S. government has indicated that the Islamic State has claimed responsibility for this attack, and the U.S. government gives credence to those claims. But, you know, at the end of the day, people of violence always tends to navigate towards their true north. And what I mean by that is, let's take a special forces team operating behind enemy lines. If they're compromised, they try to go home. They try to escape and evade towards friendly lines. ISIS has loyalty to their perverted version of religion, God. Their true north is to become martyrs, to navigate home to heaven. But that's not what these terrorists did.
Which I really think is an excellent point about the at very least, the presented narrative that we're supposed to view as these religious extremists through ISIS. Even though, again, as I pointed out, people like the same point they made before about Saudi Arabia, the point they've made that there's leadership in ISIS don't even believe in what they claim they believe in. Because I argue most of these are assets, like directly from CIA, Mossad kind of discussion. But the point is that the people beneath them, the ones that they use that false concept to manipulate, like with Zionism, and not in a sense in a false case, but using their religion to manipulate Jewish people, it's the same idea. Well, I guess in this case, it's the same thing, because these people believe in their religious aspect of it. I'm just the difference being the extremist aspect of, I don't think all Judaism is extremist. I think it's the Zionist overlap that makes it that way. Same point here, though, is you've got people that already kind of believe in the tenets they're putting out. And you have people that are using those to control those people and to get them to take extremist action, including taking their own life. Right. The point, though, is that it could arguably be that, like I said before, that that very concept is not even real in the core sense, that all these people are simply being manipulated. You know what I mean? Like, but I don't think that. I do genuinely think that there are real entities that we could consider ISIS that are only there, by the way, because our governments have made that the reality. But that's to say that, you know, whether they're all assets or all not believing it versus some. The real core point is that I think from the top down, we can see that this is about a psychological operation. That's why I say, is it even real? In the sense that it's manufactured to manipulate you for a certain end at your expense, almost always.
Their true north was Ukraine, and they were navigating towards Ukraine. And that's all we need to know about this. This was an attack that was linked to the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Who was behind this attack? Who were the masterminds are? The Russian security services will find out.
Now, I should say really quickly, too, the reason I think it's clear to say that they were going to Ukraine is because they're saying it publicly. I'll show you next. At the very least, the only caveat is it that's the people that they claim they caught, that they claim were responsible. It could be that they're lying or that they're wrong. We can decide as this goes forward. But they're publicly saying, we were going back to Ukraine, we were going back to a hostel, they paid us, and all that. which, by the way, Freddie Pontone argues is just a narrative that they were put together to say to hide the real culprit. But either way, it's right now the evidence shows that they were going back to Ukraine because they said so, until more comes out to challenge one or the other. So it's not the same as just blindly taking what ISIS posts online, like we're seeing people blindly believe because it works for their agenda. I want to make that clear.
But whoever they are, they reside in Ukraine. Let's parse this out just a little bit more. The CIA has been working with Ukrainian intelligence since 2014 to carry out espionage, to carry out acts of violence against Russia. And since 2022, when the Russians initiated the special military operation, the CIA has been working with Ukrainian intelligence to double down on these acts of espionage and violence. We know that the CIA is behind the recruitment, training, and direction of various anti-Putin Russian extremist groups that are operating under the umbrella of the Ukrainian intelligence services. These forces are carrying out active attacks against Russia as we speak in the area of Belgorod and Kursk. Let me make it clear. The CIA is behind the invasion of Russia by CIA-backed and funded Russian nationalist groups working for Ukrainian intelligence. So for those who would say, well, the CIA would never be behind an act of terrorism in Moscow, why not? The CIA right now is behind an active invasion of Russia. The CIA is behind the targeting of strategic Russian sites, oil depots, refineries throughout Russia. The CIA is behind this, actively assisting the Ukrainians in targeting these facilities. If the CIA is willing to blow up an oil depot or refinery hundreds of kilometers inside Russia, why wouldn't they be behind a terrorist attack at the Crocus City Hall? The CIA has for decades now been seeking to undermine Russian democracy, to pervert Russian democracy by buying Russian opposition figures, not to further the interests of the Russian nation, but to undermine the presidency of Vladimir Putin. The CIA was involved in such operations leading up to this very election that just transpired earlier this month. So why wouldn't the CIA be behind a terrorist attack in Moscow? We know that the CIA is actively working with nations on the periphery of Russia, in the Caucasus, in Central Asia, to generate anti-Russian sentiment. We know that the CIA openly brags about seeking to recruit people amongst these populations, these disaffected populations, for the singular purpose of undermining Russia, of sowing chaos in Russia, of bringing down Vladimir Putin. Why wouldn't the CIA be behind a terrorist attack in Moscow? It's a rhetorical question, because the answer is clear. The CIA was behind this, directly or indirectly.
And quite frankly, I'm making the same tangential point about Israel. I think it's the same thing. Now, I'm not saying that that means that they're necessarily provably responsible for this event. I do think that. I think there's obvious connection here. My point is that what he's saying is, and that's the point I made right in the beginning, is that simply because of the overlaps that you can prove, whether it's because of the funding that created these groups that later carried it out, or because of the allowances currently that allow them to do it right as it's happening, or, you know, or any number of other things, that the gaslighting around the story after the fact, that they're clearly responsible or involved or complicit. But I think as this goes forward, the more that comes out, it may very well be that they were literally responsible, like personally on the ground kind of a concept, because that wouldn't surprise me either. Like the idea that these are actually assets that were pretending to be, you know, extremists. We'll go, as we finish, we'll show you some of the images that I think are a little contradictory, right? Of some of the images we saw about who they claim were being arrested. And it could just be that it was just different cameras, different lighting that just looked different to me. But I'm not saying that proves anything. We just should consider that. And same point, we should wonder whether Russia could be lying about something. I mean, there's never a point as we shouldn't question the narratives coming from people in a conversation. The idea is that people are driven to take sides that you then go softer on, and that's where we fall short. Partisan media, rather, right? We shouldn't be like that.
One has to reflect on how the CIA gets its authorities to do actions such as this. These are covert actions. The CIA has the remit to carry out covert actions dating back to the 1948 decision to reform the American National Security Enterprise. They are allowed to carry out covert actions. They are allowed to lie about carrying out these covert actions. The President of the United States is allowed to distance himself in the United States from these covert actions. The President is required to report to Congress through what is known as a presidential finding what the CIA is doing in rough terms. The CIA to be doing what they're doing today in Ukraine, doing what they're doing against Russia, they require a presidential finding. That means that President Joe Biden has authorized the CIA to carry out these actions, and that this authorization has been reported to certain elements within the U.S. Congress.
Or whoever's actually in control, Biden, or, you know, I think that's a very valid point, that I don't necessarily think Biden is even actually in control of much, or even necessarily any other president, quite frankly, but his point is the same. Whoever the real decision maker is, it had to come through that.
This means that America is at war with Russia. And that's what people need to reflect upon.
Right.
When they talk about the terrorist attack on the Crocus City Hall and concert venue. Because if this was something that was planned by Ukraine, then it means it was something that was planned by Ukraine under the direction of the CIA to carry out an American policy objective which seeks the strategic defeat of Russia. When Vladimir Putin says that the perpetrators will be hunted down and brought to justice, one of those perpetrators appears to be the CIA. And what does that mean for U.S.-Russian relations going forward? That's something not only for the Russian people to consider, but more importantly for the American people to consider. Do the American people understand that the Biden administration is navigating them towards the abyss, towards a point of no return, towards a war with Russia, towards a nuclear Armageddon? I think so. I think it's high time that the people of America, and indeed their representatives in Congress, reflect on this, because that's the direction we're heading. The terrorist attack on the Crocus City Hall and concert venue was an American attack on Russia.
It's a big statement. He's got a lot of pull. Now, remember, we just talked about this yesterday. This was what Ukraine said. This is The Guardian reporting what they said. Of course, denied the attack. But I love what they had to say, because it's, of course, you know, all he really had to do, Zelensky, whoever else, is stand up and say, no, we wouldn't do that. They're lying. That's it. People would have bought it. People, the media would have reported it the same way. But of course, just like with Israel, they have to come out and give the ridiculous argument. No, they're not starving. They have more food than they've ever had in their life. Instead of just saying, no, we're giving them aid, they're lying about that. Here he is, comes in, goes, no, we didn't do this. In fact, we've never done anything like that. In fact, we only decide on the battlefield. Oh, you mean except for this example where you attacked Russia and their energy infrastructure that the U.S. government asked you to stop? Or this example where you used drones to bomb deep into Russia? Or this example where Ukraine claims a major strike on Russian airfields and thanks the U.S. for providing the weapons to do it? You mean all those examples that didn't happen? I mean, it's painful, right? And they just don't care. But because his argument is the battlefield. And there's no realm in this where the battlefield is in the middle of the Russian territory. The battlefield is the battlefield, the front line. That's what we're talking about. And the idea here is that what he's arguing is that we only engage in this concept. We don't have to go after civilians, because the point is all of these are civilians. All of these. These are in civilian areas all over Russia. Weird how nobody cares about that. And even after they claim those attacks. But he says certainly had nothing to do with this. Ukraine's been fighting the Russian army for more than 2 years, and everything has been on the battlefield. Lie. Only by the quantity of weapons and qualitative military decisions. I mean, you could prove these things are not true. Terrorist attacks do not solve any problems, except for the many times that you've literally carried out attacks on civilians. But it says Ukraine has never resorted to using these terrorist methods. I mean, you realize that even their allies have called them out for doing things like that? It's just bad. So I think that speaks to dishonesty, which is just what they do. So it's maybe not indicative of responsibility, but that's how I tend to read this. Here is what he said. This is posted the 23rd. It might have come out yesterday. Oh, in fact, it's actually in Ukrainian. So I'll just read it to you. It's this guy's face. It's just something about this guy. Something interesting. But he says, she says, this is Dagny Taggart sharing this. Zelensky called Putin a non-entity, commenting on the terrorist attack in Krokus City Hall, which is a strange thing to say. He says, yesterday all this happened, and this non-entity, Putin, instead of dealing with his citizens of Russia, addressing them, was silent for a day. Nothing about how connect this to Ukraine. What's funny to me is I don't understand this game. Even Russia is doing this today, where basically I think the UN spoke up and said that they were saddened by this attack, which, by the way, is pretty odd language to use. But why is everybody like demanding that you, in any context, remember when Trump didn't like condemn the thing right away and they were like, how dare he not do the thing we all know we're supposed to do when any bad thing anywhere happens is come out and go, I condemn the thing that just happened. Why? Like, why is that even necessary? Like, you need to know what these people, like, obviously, you know what they're at least supposed to say, they think, and you know that's what they're going to say, even regardless if they don't care. So my point is that the UN said that and Putin screamed, like, he demanded they come out and change it. And they did. They updated it and said, we condemn it in the strongest terms. And he goes, thank you. It's like, maybe there's something around those words that we don't realize, like a legal thing, like they have to go condemn this, or I don't know. It's interesting to me. My point is the same here. His point is Putin didn't come out and say anything about this until a whole day later. Okay. He's probably doing things as opposed to stating meaningless things for public consumption. He's probably actually trying to investigate, or who knows? The point is, though, it's strange that we make this context about how it's all about the public display. He didn't say the right thing at the right time for the current ritual. He had, you know, it's very weird. But either way, a non-entity. He seems like he's kind of spinning out right now. Now, here's a weird addition to this. This is kind of an anomaly. I personally think it's fascinating just because of the deep fake claim that I keep telling you is coming up strong right now. Sprinter Factory shared this today, or excuse me, yesterday. It was later yesterday. Secretary of National Security and Defense Council of Ukraine. At least that's what it looks like. Having fun in Moscow today. He says, I think it's a lot of fun. I would like to believe that we will arrange such fun for them more often. That's a pretty crazy thing to say after people just got shot, civilians. After all, they are brotherly people and you need to please their relatives more often than visit them more often. So basically in a weird, casual way, basically saying that we need to do these kind of things more often to Russians. Now, a lot of people down here, deep fake, not real, which I'm not really sure why. Because I look at this and I'm like, I don't know. I guess it could be. It's kind of fuzzy. I don't see the things people are saying. They're like, you can clearly see it in the lips and the hairline. That's what they say down there. And I'm like, maybe. Maybe it's because I don't speak Ukrainian and maybe the words don't line up. I don't know. Either way, I think it's two things. If it's not a deep fake, that's a pretty crazy thing to say publicly, which, by the way, Ukrainians have already done, just like the Israelis are doing on their media today. During the height of the Ukraine-Russia war talking discussions, they would come out on the TV and praise the attacks on Russian civilians. It's the same thing. And of course, our media would pretend it wasn't happening, just like it's happening with Israel right now. So it's not that hard to wrap your mind around that this could have happened. But then the other point is the same thing. It's very interesting to me that the world of deep fakes is going to change everything in a really dangerous way, to where even if this is real, you're going to have a huge faction, just like the rebel news is going to just assume this is ISIS because it works for their narrative and it couldn't be Israel. People are going to say, well, we know it's not them because we don't want it to be. And people are going to think it is, even if they can't prove that, because they want it to be. And that's going to become the sides. That's going to become the majority. That's Twitter files in a crazy way, blindly taking what you're given. And, you know, it's video, so it's interesting. Anyway, I wanted to include that because I thought that's strange. So if it's not a deep fake and it comes out that it's not, that's an important piece of evidence here. Now, overall, I wanted to include these points again, the idea that we have to recognize this goes back a long way, that the CIA have been creating fascism and terrorism and extremism in Ukraine in particular with Project Aerodynamic. I think I said Operation Air at the same point, though. I think it's actually Project Aerodynamic, at least going back to 1948. And we've covered this just in the last show. It's literally directly from a CIA document that I showed you last time where they discuss openly that they're doing this. It's public. Project Aerodynamic. And I show you Mykola Lebed, who you could look up for yourself, is a Nazi war criminal who they put in charge of a media group in the United States and in Ukraine. That should freak people out. Probably happening today. They go, hey, come on, Nazi, inform our public with your kind of, you know, your kind of worldview, because they're fighting them, right? Either way, the point was, it was about the Ukrainian, the Organization for Ukrainian Nationals, and creating the fascist entity to manipulate Soviet Union and today Russia, and ultimately became the Azov movements, all these Svoboda and the right sector and all these crazy groups, at least influenced them very clearly the direction of Ukraine. I want to make sure you understand that, because this all overlaps to this very day with what they're currently doing. It's the same thing. Oh, this was just I was searching for other articles I had that connected, but I guess I didn't take time to look at it, so I won't do it now. But Zelensky also, back in 2022, don't forget, openly said he wants Ukraine to be a big Israel. So it's just not hard to see. Including all the points of today, that they're funding, both in Syria and in Ukraine, the extremists that they pretend that they're not, openly in some cases, right? That they're supporting them in other cases. They're giving medical treatment, by the way, in the Golan Heights to ISIS members. And then they speak up and say, oh, we're sorry, we didn't mean to bomb you. And also realizing Zelensky, the overlap therein, Kolomoisky being the chief financier of his entire campaign, who also happens to be the chief funder of the Azov movement. It's just all of it overlaps, guys, all of it. Now, to end, I wanted to go over. Oh, actually, I forgot about this. So I was going to go over some points at the end here about just some Israel stuff, but I wanted to make sure we saw this as well. So this is the current discussion about what Putin said and the different videos. I mean, quite frankly, I think all the other stuff we discussed is far more important than, you know, what we're seeing on the videos about what they're showing us. But let's go over this quickly. This is Putin's statement. There's a couple things that stood out to me that I wanted to play for you real quick. Basically just telling you what happened, you know, people. And I'm going to go over the RT article next to kind of update you as the current information of what's going on. And let's go to right here. A couple points that stood out to me. So they declare a national day of mourning. It says, in Moscow and in the Moscow region, in all regions of the country, introduced additional measures of anti-terrorist and anti-sabotage nature. The main thing now is to prevent those who are behind this bloody massacre from committing new crimes. Now, right there, it shouldn't be any different, just because there's narratives out there that people try to argue that, like, Russia's fighting the bad guys, which certainly could be. It's just as concerning to me that you have any government that is utilizing an action like this, just like we would be worried the U.S. government is utilizing a shooting to institute more control over the population. That, I mean, you could argue it's from a place of good intention. I don't know why we would assume that. I don't believe any government's fighting for you. I know that's going to probably irritate some people in the independent media that like to see this person as somebody on. I don't see any government on our side of the people. I just don't. I think that, and I think even if I'm wrong, I think that's a safe way to stand because of how the history has gone. And I consider all sides of it. I don't, as I've said before, I consider the fact that he may just be that, or also the fact that he may be acting in a role that is in, you know, that he recognizes how beneficial it can be to play the role of the altruistic person in counterbalance to how belligerent both these US and Israel are right now. In any case, it's your opinion. You can decide for yourself. I think it's interesting to see that this is, like, let's just say Putin goes away and somebody else comes into power. If you're instituting more control of the population based on attacks like this, it just makes me concerned. Now, that's only to say that something could happen. I don't even know what things he's talking about or what has happened yet, or what it'll only take place of, like, more police or something like that. Either way, I just wanted to point it out because it's important to be objective and show both sides of this in regard to governments power grabbing in after things like this. It happens everywhere. So at 2:43 is another point I want to make. Yeah, he says a total of 11 people were actually detained. I'll read that in this article next. Four of them, apparently, they claim are part of the shootings, and 11 of them detained, which doesn't really get into much detail about what that means. Now it says the Russian Federal Security Service and other law enforcement agencies are working to uncover the entire auxiliary base of the terrorists, those who provided them with transportation, planned escape routes from the crime scene, prepared caches of weapons and ammunition. I repeat, the new investigation and law enforcement agencies will do everything possible to establish all the details of the crime. So it's interesting is that, you know, obviously, first of all, he's clearly suggesting that this is not just some isolated thing. So there are other people that helped them do this. Now, that obviously is aimed at exactly who you think it is. I mean, he's made these statements before. It's very clear that they see Israel and the U.S. government acting against them in every possible way, because they are, guys. It's very clear. He says, but it's already obvious that they are faced not just with a carefully, cynically planned terrorist attack, or they were, but with a prepared and organized mass murder of peaceful, defenseless people. The criminals went in cold blood and purposefully killed to shoot at point-blank range our citizens, our children. Some children died. At once, the Nazis who carried out massacres in occupied territories, they planned to organize a showy execution. I could be reading into it, but I get the sense here, multiple things he says are aimed at Israel. Back when they were Nazis, like, you could have pulled on any historical point. There's been many historical overlaps to people just doing, you know, acts of terror to create, that's what terrorism is. Violent acts to achieve political ends. But he makes a point to specifically draw on the Nazi argument, specifically make a point about occupied territories, which I don't even think really plays. And I think I think he's pointing very clearly. This is why I point out all the time. Putin is very tactful. It doesn't mean good guy. You read it if you want, but he is very measured and very calculating when he does this stuff. And it's smart. So you can't be like, he's pointing at you're anti-Semitic. But I think we all can pick up on it. But that's my opinion. You can think for yourself. Here, I'll show you it again. And once, back in history, Nazis carried out massacres in occupied territories. They planned to organize a showy execution, a bloody act of intimidation, which literally is what Israel's doing right now in Gaza. And says all the perpetrators, organizers, and customers of this crime, so it's broad. People working with them, the customers of them, customers. Is that a nod to the U.S. government? Crime will be justly and inevitably punished, whoever they are, whoever directed them. Now, I'm not saying I know for sure. I'm just pointing out the possibilities, and I'm just, this is what I kind of read from it, but even in my mind, I'm thinking that's not for sure. That's just an opinion, but it's interesting. I just want to make sure I point that out to you and made it clear that it's just my opinion. He says, I repeat, we will identify and punish everyone who stands behind the terrorists, who prepared this atrocity, this blow to Russia and to our people. Now, right there, you could make an argument that he's saying the same thing that Israel is saying. Well, it really depends on the actions taken. You could argue that he just simply means putting him in jail. Right? If he goes on to carry out massive atrocities in civilian areas claimed on the fact that, well, one of those guys was there, well, then we should accuse him of being the same thing Israel is. Somehow, I don't think that's going to happen. What's hilarious is all of these clumsy attempts to already connect this to what's happening in Israel. It's just painfully obvious, not even close to the same thing. But again, if he should go on to carry out mass attacks on civilian areas that kill 400 people to go after one person, well, then, yeah, I would say he is just as bad. We'll wait and see, I guess. And this was... right here. Okay, so let's go to 423. Last point here. The joint voices, let's say, I think it starts here. I'll go back a little further. Count here on cooperation with all states that sincerely share our pain and are ready to really join forces in the fight against the common enemy, international terrorism, which is hilarious because that's what everybody, the Western complicit allies will just lob at Russia for no reason, or Iran, leading state sponsor of terrorism, when there's just like nothing to back that up other than what they claim is terror. Hamas and Yemen and all of, the Houthis, as you're literally funding Hamas, ISIS, and Al-Qaeda, the ones that everybody claims is terrorism. You know, it's just, these things are breaking down in front of everybody right now. That's not to say that Russia's devoid of any accountability there. There's overlaps with even Russia and Israel, guys. It's just simply to acknowledge that right now these things are breaking down, and you may be seeing Russia try to play this the right way to win more respect from people so they can later become what the U.S. is today. You can decide for yourself. But either way, I think what he's saying here is done well. He says, with all its manifestations, meaning not just one place, but all the countries involved in what's happening, in my opinion, says terrorists, murderers, subhumans who have no and can have no nationality. Again, doesn't that feel like a kind of a slight to the Israeli Zionist agenda? You know, it could be, or it could be just that he sees these roaming terrorists for what they are, just these proxy armies that have no nationality. But I feel like a lot of this lines up to be nodded towards, you know, the Israeli situation, or specifically the Zionist situation. It says, we will have one inevitable fate, retribution and oblivion. They have no future. Interesting. So you can decide for yourself. I thought those were important points to relay. Now, here's what the Associated Press said. Breaking: Russia's increasing security after a concert hall attack that killed 115 people. Putin suggests, but offered no evidence, he says, that Ukraine was linked to the Islamic State Afghan branch, which claimed responsibility. It's always so embarrassing for these supposedly leading journalism groups. Like, so did you try to look into the claim? Did you give it your old, what's a college try or whatever that statement is? Of course not. Because if you did, it'd be very easy to see that there's clear overlaps between some elements of both things. But no, because it's Putin and you just kind of toe these lines when it's easy for you, you just go, but there's no, but he says this without presenting evidence. But does that mean there is no evidence? Well, that's clearly what your readers are going to assume because they want to. And that's how this usually gets played. But suggesting more security measures, which I kind of nodded to, but also just the idea that they're saying something you can prove isn't true. But there is obvious overlap. And here's what RT put out. This is from today. Deadly Moscow terrorist attack. What's known so far? And I'll show you the parts I think are relevant. Details are still emerging, but according to Russia's Federal Security Service, the attack was carefully planned and designed to maximize casualties. That's what I was kind of saying yesterday. I kind of said to maximize attention. Kind of the same point, though, right? That was one of the indications that gave me one of the things that gave me the indication that this was not what it appeared to be. Right. Like as Scott Ritter points out, that they, you know, if we're pretending this is an ISIS thing, well, you would have seen this go a different way. This seems to have been like, and I'll show you a video actually that, you know, for all I know, it's not even real, but this is being shared around right now from the Telegram channel that they're pointing to that they claim they got the information from. So at the very least, that's if the tweet they're showing you or the image that ISIS claimed it is real and they're able to blindly point at it, well, this would be then too. I say we question both of them because we can't prove it. But I'll play it for you to show you what they're sharing. That it seems that it was about maximizing, like, I mean, you know, the video, they're just like shooting at nothing. The windows are shooting everywhere. And it's kind of just, I don't know. It feels like it was not about what you would argue this would be about in regard to what we would pretend ISIS would do. More so about making sure you got the most amount of attention, the most amount of chaos for this kind of purpose. Now, and maximize casualties. Now it says an investigation into the incident is underway. Here's what they know so far. 11 people, including 4 terrorists who were directly involved, they claim, have been detained. The FSB said in a statement on Saturday, this was today, according to the security service in Russia, the weapons used in the shooting were organized in a cache in advance. That's what he was speaking to. Russia's investigative committee also confirmed that 4 suspects who, quote, committed the terrorist attack on Krokus City Hall were detained in Bryansk region, quote, not far from the border with Ukraine. According to authorities, they were planning to flee to Ukraine, which is what they then said when interrogated. But you could argue all the same things. Doesn't look like they're in some interrogation room. Same point, though. You could argue they're saying whatever they need to say to avoid whatever's on the side of the camera. So all these things should be considered. Now it says, according to the investigative committee, as of Saturday afternoon, the death toll in the attack has risen to at least 133 people, including 3 children. As more bodies have been discovered in the rubble, of course, the Moscow region health ministry has said at least 121 people were wounded and 107 required hospitalization. Now, it says on Saturday, RT editor-in-chief Margarita Simonian posted footage of the interrogation of one of the suspects. The man in the video claims that he went on the killing spree after he was promised about $5,400. The suspect also, and it was in rubles, so I think that's an important point. The suspect also claimed that his handlers had instructed him as to where the attack should take place. He said he was ordered to just kill people, doesn't matter who. That suspect claimed that the terrorist attack was organized on a Telegram channel with the unknown person who provided weapons. I mean, it just seems kind of flimsy, right? Like, so you're just, this guy would just randomly just listen to a Telegram channel who couldn't even verify because they said they would give him $5,000. Seems like a really flimsy argument. And that's why Freddie Pontone is arguing this seems like a kind of a set narrative that they would say if they got caught. But it says the venue, which has an estimated capacity of 7,500 people, was apparently almost full. I guess over 6,000 people. The attackers killed, which then makes you wonder why there was really so little people killed. I mean, that's a terrible thing to, I mean, so thank God, but it, you know, they seem to come upon this room where the video we saw where it was full. So something to consider. I don't know what that would mean, but keep that in mind as we go forward. The attackers killed unarmed security guards at the entrance of the venue and then blocked it before continuing their rampage. And then they later set the whole building on fire. So it seems on both sides of this, or at least not, that seems clearly they wanted to kill all those people. According to eyewitnesses, the gunman opened fire point blank range on anyone who came into view. Which again, it seems like you'd have more that were shot, but maybe that's because, you know, really, if you think about it, in that kind of an event, the moment the shooting starts, people are going to flee. And that's, you know, that's when I think about it, that probably makes sense that the, you know, take the time it would take to shoot 130 people, most of them would probably be gone by then. So yeah, now that I take that back or think about it, that makes sense. And it says, they blocked the doors, shot the security guards. At least that's what they're claiming. According to the eyewitnesses, the gunman opened fire point blank range. Then the assaultant set the building on fire. Lastly, and this is the point I think is just really transparent, it says earlier this month, the U.S. issued a warning to its citizens in Russia, urging them to avoid public places, mass gatherings. Everyone's talking about that. The embassy claimed that, quote, extremists had imminent plans. And remember, one of the people that used to do this for the U.S. government said clearly that if they were saying that, at the very least, they're supposed to have such real-time evidence that the point where they couldn't act on it and they could prove it. So, of course, I don't believe that they always stick to those rules. They lie about everything. But the point would be that, logically speaking, they're supposed to. And then it says several other embassies followed suit. Multiple, I think, I forget which ones it was, but multiple groups around the world also warned. However, John Kirby for the White House, who just spoke about this yesterday, said he had no specific advance knowledge. That's his quote. Like, is it like, do they really think we're that stupid? So what do you say, warning 48 hours, and then later say we had no advance knowledge, even though this whole warning is not supposed to go out unless you have specific knowledge in advance? I mean, I don't know. I just find that to be like really dumb that they think you're not going to buy, that you're just going to look past that. And then going back to this point from that article, and I'll get into a post here from Let's Talk Zora Ranch. And this is a subjective kind of point that I think is just something to consider, but it very well could be super important as more evidence comes out. This says before, and I read this earlier, and this was the update before the attack at the entrance of the Crooked City Hall, apparently the metal detectors weren't working, and the guards, and I guess it would be before they shot them, didn't check the bags. At least that's what they're reporting. Which is an interesting point. So if all this fleshes out, the point he's making here is, and let's just go to this article. First of all, the owner, and this is what he shared, by the way, so shout out to Let's Talk Zora Ranch, or he or she, I'm not sure which, the owner of Crocus City Hall, where terrorist attack took place, is Ilham Aliyev's former son-in-law, who is apparently the leader of Azerbaijan. And his point is, that Azerbaijan is the great ally of Israel. The owner of this city, this location that it happened in, is the father of the guy married to the daughter of the Azerbaijani president. He says, and there seems to have been no security at the door. So it could be nothing, right? It could just be that they did this otherwise, but it's an interesting point. The seeing is how now it's coming out that the metal detectors weren't working, the security wasn't there, or at least they weren't checking bags. Like, there's a lot of real-time information coming out. So take it with a grain of salt. And so I'm making very clear, but a lot of this is kind of just circulating information, that it would be interesting if more evidence backs it up, that this was something that was planned with this kind of a connection to make sure that the building was ready for whatever they were going to do. Now, if this was like a Mossad CIA operation, that would make a lot of sense. It's a very interesting point. Now, this is the point we make about this before. It's like things like this. Nobody should shy away from talking about this. Nobody should be afraid to be called a conspiracy. Like, especially when we're being very clear that it's just a thought. It's a consideration. We're theorizing about what the possibilities around this thing, and ultimately being clear that this is just a point we're still fleshing out. I just don't know why it's, I mean, I know why, but I don't know why average people get so, you know, you're being controlled. to be afraid to consider things like whether Israel might be responsible. How dare you, right? That's how that works. But here's RT's clip on this, and this is where they kind of translate for you what they're saying. So again, take that with a grain of salt. Maybe there's things, that words they leave out. That happens in any context. They don't let you hear. I have no evidence to suggest that's happening. But the reason I say that actually is because it seems that on one side of this, which we'll show you next, then I quite frankly have no respect for the kind of information that comes out through people like Mario Narfall, because I see constantly how they just kind of grab what came out in the headlines and kind of just spit it out on Twitter. And 9 times out of 10, that later turns out to be not accurate. And people regard that as independent media. You're just regurgitating mainstream headlines. So my point, though, is that this came out, and what we're hearing is the very specific narrative from the mainstream conversation. And I think and I'm not saying it's not true, but they're saying he's speaking Tajik, and this person is a Tajiki, he's a migrant from Tajikistan. And he's saying what we're being told from Mario is that they're saying that he was going back to meet other migrants from Tajikistan back in the hostel. But as far as I can tell, everywhere else, that doesn't seem to be what they're reporting. So I don't speak Tajikistan, Tajiki, or however you would say that. But my point is that I think it's interesting that this narrative seems to very interestingly start to overlap with, you know, the migrants and the migrant problem, and that they're invading, and even then talking about the fact that these people are coming to the border. I mean, it's an interesting overlap to all of this. And I'll play this video, which is why I have this pulled up in the first place. But first, here's what RT is reporting about the story and what these detainees, what they're claiming are the terrorists they've taken, and with, I guess, 11 others arrested, but yet to flesh out what they're actually saying.
Advaites and Marina Kozareva. Marina, good to see you again. Key developments just in the last hour or so. Can you talk us through these details?
Absolutely. We're finding out more about the organization and planning of this terrorist attack thanks to the videos that were posted online by RT's editor-in-chief Margarita Simonyan. And these videos, she of course got it from her own sources, these videos show the immediate interrogation of 2 out of the 4 suspects who were caught fleeing the country. They were heading on their way to Ukraine, where apparently they had contacts who were supposed to help them out. Now, what we learned from these interrogations so far is the fact that this was a very organized and elaborate attack that they were planning for quite some time. And apparently, they got their orders on Telegram. Here's some more from that first suspect.
Now, let me go back before you start speaking. I want to point out, it's things like this that make me concerned. Oh, and by the way, I'll show you an image of this. I haven't been able to confirm this. It's being circulated that the Russian... whoever's involved, their military or the special forces, they're reporting that they cut off an ear of one of these people. And of course, that's being reported as these Nazi elements are taking the ear off, which certainly could be. I mean, I don't think anybody should ever disregard the fact. Like we've said every time, there are clearly Nazi elements in pretty much every country you can find. It's not hard to recognize. Whether it's this overrun concept, you can clearly prove is in Ukraine. But the argument about Russia, I think, pretty much falls flat that it's an overrun concept. But there's obviously overlaps. And I think that's important to understand. And the reason that I'm saying that is because the argument is that that's some of the elements that are applying this kind of, I guess you could argue, like a retaliatory kind of thing to these people. And they're arguing he cut one of the guy's ears off, which nobody should be okay with. Doesn't matter whether you think they're terrorists or not. It's the same argument at every other angle for them to say, well, Hamas bad guys, so we'll just murder all these people. You're just being as bad as they are. So if that's real, we should be nobody should be okay with that. And the reason I'm saying that is because I also noticed things just like right here is that, so you're claiming this guy is giving you information, right? But look, what they're doing right here, as you can clearly see, is essentially a form of torture. You've got his head and your boot under his neck, and you're applying pressure. He can't breathe. And so you're asking him to tell you things while you're essentially applying torture. So you take that with a huge grain of salt. I mean, really, from my perspective, it makes it a 50-50 flip, which makes it not worth anything. It could mean something, or it could mean that they were pressured to say it. We don't see the full context. All that to say, that's just an objective reality of something, that I don't agree with how it's being done, but the evidence has come out in a lot of different ways right now, where they're saying this stuff, that you have evidence showing, the caches, the weapon caches, a lot's coming through the Russian discussion as well. But realize, we should consider all of that through the lens that Russia could be lying about this or that for their own agenda. But the other side of it is a completely... It was ISIS-K, right? Like there's literally nothing that adds up with that other than US says. So developing story. Right. This is the point I always make, that we get to a point to where we just don't know. You got to leave it there until we get more information, which drives people in the two-party paradigm mad.
Organized an elaborate attack that they were planning.
What
suspect?
Where did he get the weapons?
They delivered the weapons themselves.
Who are they?
I don't know. They wrote on Telegram, without a name, without anything.
That makes no sense.
And how were you found? Did you look for them yourself, or did they find you?
No, they wrote to me.
Right. And why did they write to you specifically?
I don't know. I was listening there.
How is it possible? Did they recruit you, propose for you to kill people just like that? They don't just suggest to kill people to anyone.
No, I studied the Telegram lesson.
What on Telegram?
Listen. I did the lesson. I was listening to the preacher.
Did you listen to the preacher?
Yes.
And he wrote to you.
His assistant.
So look, he's visibly shaking right there. He is scared. That's clear. Now, that could be because he's just scared because he's got caught for murdering people, or it could be because he's being threatened. I think that's interesting. I made the same point about the guy they caught in Israel, right, where they threatened him, and the guy was like shaking like a leaf. So somebody like that, whether guilty or not, would probably say anything. But that's not to say it's false. But what's interesting to me is, again, the narrative that does seem to be kind of, it doesn't make a lot of sense with all that we do know about this that we can prove. Again, that's what I keep pointing to, what Freddie Pontone was arguing. This seems to be, in his opinion, at the very least, which I respect, something that was kind of organized to say. And that does line up with the idea that, a preacher, like somehow these people are getting, interestingly enough, at the same time, another narrative radicalized by these people on Telegram, and then just goes, here's $5,000, go kill people when I give you the address. What kind of person ever would just randomly do that? How do you not know that? Why wouldn't you consider that could be CIA and you're getting trapped? So I agree. I think this does not land, that ultimately that you would just do this because somebody offered you something on Telegram. You don't know who they are. I don't buy it.
Wrote to me. He told us to go to the place. They would provide everything.
Did they say specifically who to kill?
People.
What kind of people?
Doesn't matter. He told us to go inside and do this thing.
Just go in and kill?
Yes.
Authorities are now, of course, trying to establish who they are, who this preacher is, and who was given those orders on Telegram. We also heard from the second suspect, who is apparently the leader of this killer group, and he detailed how they were planning this for a couple of...
So right there, if that's the guy, it would seem like there's at least some evidence to suggest that they cut his ear off, but I think I can see his ear. I can't tell if that's gone or not, or it's just blood from him being hit in the side of the head. You guys can decide. But that, that does add a little bit of credence to the argument that they just cut his ear off because they were torturing him or whatever. But you guys can decide for yourself.
Now, they were planning this for a couple of weeks, and this is.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I can see his ear, but you guys can decide.
The part.
It also might not even be the same guy, so that's to consider as well.
Part where they ask him where they were staying.
The hostel. What is the hostel's address?
Dmitrievka.
Where exactly?
Dmitrievsky district.
What's the street name?
Near the highway.
Who did you live there with?
Muhammad.
How long did you live with Muhammad? Muhammad said 10 to 15 days.
We lived together for about a month, 15 to 20 days, for about a month.
What were you two doing?
We bought a car, wanted to work.
Who bought the car?
Abdullah, my friend, bought a car. We wanted to work with this car.
What kind of car? Taxi or cargo transportation?
A small car, a taxi.
Who is Abdullah? How did you get to know him?
Telegram.
Did you meet on Telegram?
Yes, Telegram.
On which phone?
On my phone.
Okay, when? When exactly did you meet Abdullah?
About 10 to 12 days ago.
10 to 12 days?
Yes, I've been out of work for a long time. I wanted to work.
Who is Abdullah?
I got acquainted on Telegram.
Have you met?
So here's another angle to this, if just considering possibilities, just like we see with the U.S. government and like the whole, trying to create like the right wing terrorism narrative, like by literally like finding an autistic kid and trying to get them to act. Right. I mean, we've seen countless examples of that. It could simply be possible that these people are just poor, needed to work, looking for work, couldn't find work. And they just go, here, we'll give you money to go carry out this attack. Or maybe they didn't know. I mean, who knows? It's just, you could see that there might be more leverage from another angle. And that would speak to the idea that this is not really about what they the Muslim extremism, it's about the idea from them picking people to carry out attacks for the interest of the CIA and Assad. You know, or one of the possibilities could just be that they're Muslim extremists. That does exist too. And that ultimately they still were driven to do this. You know, there's all of these kind of possibilities. But I think the important thing over all of it is to, like I started with, recognize that there is undeniable connections to ISIS in general, to the CIA and Mossad. ISIS-K in particular, even the possibility that it's not even a real thing today and that are using it as a narrative cutout. Or the open funding of any other level of extremism by Hamas or Syrian rebels, which, by the way, you can prove these guys, this guy we're talking about right here, by the way, one of them anyway, ties directly back to the rebels, or excuse me, the terrorists that the U.S. government supported in Syria.
Him?
He was with us.
Abdullah, him?
Yes.
Where and when did you meet him? Where did you meet him?
When we bought the car.
Where did you buy the car?
On the Dimitrov Highway.
From whom?
Abdullah's relatives.
This is what's been released so far. We are, of course, waiting to hear more as the suspects are being moved to Moscow. We also heard from Vladimir Putin, who, of course, extended his condolences to everyone who's been affected. And he also confirmed that not only was this an elaborate and coordinated attack, but he said that the most important thing for now, at least, is the fact that those who did the shooting and killing were captured, apprehended, detained. And also he confirmed the fact that there was a safe haven for these killers in Ukraine.
Interesting. Now here's the other angle. I just want to show you the look of this guy. Like, I mean, look, he is shaking. Right there. Weird, obviously. And maybe he should be, right? Especially if he was responsible for these attacks. But going forward, here's some of the other points I want to contrast this with. Now, again, these were preliminary. I mean, there's all sorts of things you could add to that. Maybe they arrested the wrong guy at first, you know, whatever. Or maybe this is the same person and it's just hard to tell with the hands. But I think it's interesting that the hands here don't look like the same skin color the people were pointing to in there. That's one point. And there's not much else you get from this. You can't really see. I do find it interesting they put his head down right here. He starts to look around and they're like, no, look down. Like, I don't know. That's just interesting. I don't know why that would be the case. But overall, you can't really get a good shot of it. And then here's the other one. This guy just took a screenshot of this. One of the other captured terrorists in the Moscow Crocus Hall. I mean, that doesn't even look... I mean, again, it's a bad picture. That very well could be this guy, right? Which does look more like the kind of... But, the same point here is that, to me, doesn't look like ISIS or any of these overlaps. That looks more like a overlap of the whole Mossad sort of Ukrainian manipulation. But that could be that. But this guy looks a lot more white to me. Just want to point that out. But again, this could have been altered online for all I know. But a lot of this stuff is circulating. And to me, I saw this yesterday. So pretty shocky, surprised if this was immediately altered, but certainly possible. And by the way, we showed this video yesterday too. So this is just a screenshot of what we showed you. But it's just certainly considered the possibility, and an abstract one, that maybe these people aren't who were actually caught. You know, I mean, it's certainly one of the possible concepts here that Russia might be involved in some lie as well. But I'm just throwing that out there to be objective. I frankly think the evidence speaks for itself today. But that's an interesting point. And now here, they're showing the other one here. And this is just another guy. That this is one of the reports where they caught him. Then here's that video I was telling you about. Now, it does show briefly some what appear to be dead bodies, so just be aware of that. It's a violent, violent video. It's not just wildly graphic other than the fact that the context itself is graphic. Now, it's saying ISIS posted new videos of their terrorist attack yesterday. This is the point, as you can see on the actual thing. It's coming from the Telegram, the same point we're getting this from of the other stuff. Oh, and this is just them showing that Kirby basically lying about not knowing about it. But I want to play this video for you. I don't know what I'm supposed to see from this. I guess one of the possibilities is it's not actually there and somebody manufactured this, but it'd be a really crazy, hard, difficult thing to do, especially through the same channel this quickly with the very similar. And I'm pretty sure you can tell just by the way it looks that it is in that venue, but anything's possible, deep fakes and so on. But what it tells to me, what shows me based on the assumption that, you know, that it might be real is that it doesn't make sense with the way that we saw this, it kind of lines up with the original shooting we saw, that it seems almost aimless at first. Shooting windows and just kind of shooting around. And I don't know. Like Scott Ritter said, it doesn't doesn't line up for me with what we would argue, we're told, the ISIS elements would act. But you can decide for yourself. I mean, to me, that looks like a guy who doesn't know how to handle a gun. Then he starts shooting and he gets, and you know, it's pushing him back. Like, it looks like a child who's picked up his first gun. So you guys can decide what you want with that. I think, right there, like that's the area. That's the you know, but I think it's interesting. So it could be that the entire thing that's dripped out on these Telegram channels is all complete propaganda. You know, again, these are data points and we have to piece it together as more comes out. But with everything we've talked about today, it's more and more starting to look like there's definitely something fishy around this whole thing. Now, I'm going to end with just a couple of quick points that I think speak to the nature of one of the entities involved, in my opinion, with what we're talking about today. And of course, you could argue it's not connected. Let's just discuss things that are happening with Israel, because that's one of the things we're discussing lately. But I think it's important to consider this, especially as we're watching this kind of, you know, just the dehumanization. And as this guy's name is Charlie Herbert. He says, I spent 34 years in the army, frontline service in the Gulf War, Iraq, Afghanistan, etc. Not once would I have thought it was acceptable to be filmed with detainees in this sort of scene. It's unconscionable. Maybe not a huge deal, but symptomatic of an IDF that has lost any morality. This is a video of these IDF members, in the West Bank, not in Gaza, sitting there with a bunch of Palestinians who are blindfolded, but not naked. So all that narrative they keep saying about, we have to make sure they don't have suicide bombs on. Well, clearly then that's not the case. You're clearly torturing them just because you want to. And the video only makes that more clear. They're eating their food, smiling. And simply the fact that they're doing this is crazy. Why do they think that's okay? That either means that their own leadership tells them it's okay, or they know that they're not going to be held accountable for it. Or they're so completely out of sorts in that military that they don't even know what's going on. Any one of those things are possible, but this is grotesque, Nyan. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that if it was anywhere else, they would be screaming about how this is why we have to fight. These are the kind of things we need to stand up to against the rules-based international order, clearly, except when it's them, or really that you don't care about any of those things. And of course, with all the lackey followers online, we'll go, they're Hamas. They know they're Hamas. But that's how do you know that? That's a self-serving assumption. Secondarily, every single time, and I mean every time we've had this happen, some of them later were released because they weren't Hamas. And even the IDF came up and said, they were suspected Hamas. I mean, they just told ABC that they killed 140 suspected Hamas members. Yeah, that was the last discussion of the Al-Shifa hospital discussion. I mean, there's so much evidence. I don't even feel like I need to qualify these things anymore. We know what this is. What I'm really arguing against is the narratives being spun by the people who don't care what I have to say. But hopefully there's somebody out there that's still looking for the truth with a genuine intent and can see this and go, wow, I never saw that before. And I need to understand what these people are. It makes me sick. And I think there was a... Yeah, I just want to make sure you saw that too. Isn't that just disgusting? I mean, again, like the guy said, it's kind of a small example, but you know how terrified these people are? And you're sitting in their home in the West Bank, by the way. And then Professor Francois, I think it's Blah. How do you pronounce that? I'm not sure. Points this out. And he says, have a look at that. It's incomprehensible to me how military discipline can break down to such an extent. I think it's actually more, and he's talking about this video, by the way. Or actually, no, I think he's talking about this one, but he's using this as another example. And the point is, I'm not sure it actually broke down. I'm starting to think this is how it always was. And it says, in comparison, the Russians look professional. Now, this is a person who's arguing the Russians aren't professional, which I frankly disagree with. But either way, here is another video. This is a video of the Israeli military that they post and it says, well, I would argue that they, whoever posted this, put they bomb civilians for fun. But the point is, this video was posted by the Israeli military. That's where these things come from. They're praising, and we all know that. They're posting this stuff on their Telegram channels. They're posting this on their Instagrams, knowing everyone's going to see it. This is what this shows you. And this is actually, this is crazy to me. I mean, that actually fired. And if you realize, it's actually pointed at one of these areas. The point is that that didn't seem to be for any reason. Like we showed you before, where they just, like, you had like 14 people open fire on an open area where a tower people were, and they all laughed about it. At the very least, you're minimizing what's going on. You're acting like this is a game. These people are sociopaths. And I don't mean every Jew or Israeli, but I mean these people. Absolutely disgusting. So if you can't see how this flavors the other conversation, you know, I'll just leave it there. So here's Sarah Wilkinson pointing out Israeli troops have committed another aid massacre. This is like the fifth time at the same location, the Kuwait roundabout. Casualties are currently still arriving at the Al-Ali Baptist Hospital. Again, let's hope they don't bomb it again, because that's actually what happened. I mean, it just goes on and on, guys. This is overwhelming, and this is the same location repeatedly. And this is while everybody's calling them out for doing that. UN, World Food Program, saying you shot at us last time. They just don't care. I think every day they seem to care less. Here's Philippe Lazzarini telling you today, all our food convoys have been denied access to northern Gaza this week alone. Not because of Hamas, because Israel said no. And we've even seen no new reports coming from, I think it was the CNN interview with the guy, I forget the name, it was regional something. One of these other big groups, aid groups, saying that they're watching it. They're turning them back because one thing in the truck, turn around. And this is while they're screaming that we're letting in more aid than ever. And the Rolling Stone article, it said the Israeli lobby group are saying there is no famine. It says with impeded access, this man-made starvation can still be averted. Unimpeded, excuse me. They won't allow that. World Food Program said this. This is on the 19th. Famine, even in northern Gaza, could be averted. They need all of this right now. Of course, nothing happened. This is a week later. Now, on top of that, this only gets more ridiculous, quite frankly. You got to be kidding me. So this is the Twitter translation. Nothing. It was there before. I already did this. Wow. I'm telling you guys, this is not even debatable anymore. Twitter is aggressively censoring for the Zionist agenda right now. I had this up before we started. Now, to tell you what it says, since I already know, and because the point is the translation for the podcast, I hit it and it just doesn't show anything. Actually, here, let me do this. Oh, you know, on the other one, it gives you I'm going to do this all the way. Hold on. On the other browser, it gives you the little pop-up thing. You can click it right there. But let me just do it on Google Translate. This browser, in a lot of ways, really frustrates me. I got to be honest, but there's a lot of good things about it. Still deciding if I want to keep using it. Google Translate. Why would that not just go right there? Go. There we go. Okay. Here's what it says. A Palestinian was killed as a result of the fall of a box of leaflets dropped by the Israeli occupation aircraft on the citizens of West Rafah. So here they are giving these leaflets. By the way, there's no plan yet. There's no discernible plan, but they're already dropping leaflets going, get out of the way, get out of the way. Isn't that the opposite of what everyone's claiming they're about to do with a coordinated plan to save the civilians? Hardly. In fact, not only are they just screaming, get out of the way, they're dropping boxes that kill them that are supposed to be warnings to get out of the way. Think how ironic is that in a really disgusting, macabre way. It's nonstop. And now Twitter is blocking the translation, so we can't figure that out. Now here is what happened already. Remember, we reported this already. This was on the 8th of March. 5 were killed, including children, by the way, when one of the parachutes failed to open when the U.S. government dropped aid. And that's not even to get into the fact that Israel is directly bombing, for 6 examples that I can see, exactly where the U.S. drops aid. Like that's not obvious. Like they're not trying to maximize the punishment and suffering of these people. Jeffrey Lufredo has continued to highlight the extremist settlers that Israel's allowing to be there to block the aid. And here he is saying, we annihilated a huge part of Gaza. We can do the same to the Palestinians in the West Bank. They're not hiding it, guys. I actually don't think I had the video. I'll just leave it with that. Just it's very, and watch the full documentary. We showed you some of the clips. These people are going, kill them all. Innocent? No, kill them all. Like they don't care. And if you don't think that's representative of the Israeli government, that's why they think that, then you're not paying attention. It's the Zionist mentality that's doing that. Because I'll tell you, and I just had an argument, not argument, but I was discussing this online with somebody saying, look, you don't broad stroke this. There are obvious and provable groups of Jewish organizations, groups of Jewish people, and groups of Israelis in Israel that do not want this to be happening. And on top of that, that are asking for ceasefire completely in a full exchange because they want their families back. Now, yes, that's obviously overlapped with some of them that only want that and then go back to killing the people in Gaza. Sure. And I've been clear that that's even the majority. But it's important not to highlight that there are groups in this country and outside, both Jewish groups and Israelis, that do not think this is okay. Now, lastly, just have to highlight the disgusting nature of the IDF in particular. As I've shown you so many times, and as we know, and I should do an entire segment, that maybe I'll do this in the next show, because this is grotesque. They're now yet again acting like they're helping the people who they are hurting. And yet again, in coordination with this COGAT complete propaganda outlet that has only been provably lying as far back as I can look. As I showed you just every time I talk about this, I won't today because I don't want to go any longer. The idea, though, that they have already posted countless times about areas I can prove are completely destroyed. Here's the Al-Nusrat bakery. It's gone. Here is the area of the refugee. Nope, it's destroyed. Right? Here's how many bakeries there are. Nope, we can prove they're all gone. And they keep doing this. Even though I call them out underneath it, so they don't care. They know they're lying, and they know they don't care. So here's the IDF saying, our IDF forces operate in the Al-Shifa hospital, you know, the place where we just prove they're murdering people. Our soldiers have established a dedicated treatment area for the patient's safety, including infrastructure, allowing advanced treatment, you know, of the people who they are starving to death, of the people who they are, their own doctors are telling you they won't even let in gauze or anesthetic. But let's pretend like they're doing this out of the goodness of their hearts. I mean, how gross is that? You realize we can prove this. And even worse, they're blurring their faces now. Why would you do that if you're trying to show them how, look at how great we are. We're helping everybody. I think there's a level of lacking. They're aware of how obviously we're all paying attention. And look, this is what I was showing you before. This embarrassing level of like these 90s printout papers they stick on the boxes. Remember, they already got caught doing that. It said human aid or whatever it said, really clumsy. And then the boxes had weapons in them, and even BBC called them out for planting them in the office. The point, now you're hiding their faces. Don't worry, you'll end up in jail or rot. The point is, I think they're aware that people are paying attention. And so as they know they're lying, as they know we all know they're lying, and it's really just to get the most, you know, influence whoever they can, they blur their faces. So there's no, I don't know, you can decide for yourself. But we know as a matter of fact, as even the EuroMed Human Rights Group proved, that they're executing people in this building, that they're refusing to allow them to get the things they need. So I question whether this is even in that building, for crying out loud. But just to end, because we will talk about this again, here is Maryam Al-Sirari pointing out that women at the hospital have been subjected to rape, torture, and execution by Israeli forces. She's talking about Al-Shifa Hospital. And if you claim to be a feminist but stay silent on this, do us all a favor and remove it from your bio. You're not one, which that's her point. I'm not caring right now at the moment about feminism of all things going on in the world. But this is a recording of one of the people who were there. Now, you can argue they're lying. You can argue they're confused. But I think it's important to listen to what they have to say, that they're telling you. Things that we can prove, by the way. The rape, the torture that has been going on for 75 years, that the UN and every human rights group you can point at has proven this over the years and have since October 7th, by the way, in Gaza, because of the Israeli forces doing this to the people they catch and take home back to the prisons that they crack. I mean, this is both in Gaza in regard to the killing and everything else, but West Bank and the people subject to indefinite detention without charge in their prisons.
للنساء اللي اغتصبوها، بالنسبة للنساء اللي خطفوها، للي أعدموهم، للجثث اللي تحت الردم طلعوهم، حشموا كلابهم عليهم يأكلوهم. في أعضل من هيك. في أعضل.
See, that's the kind of depravity that we don't often get to see. Not that we should want to. That they're literally pulling out dead bodies and having their dogs eat them in front of people to basically torture them. And they're laughing about it. We can see it everywhere. They're literally doing things out of pure cruelty and then chuckling about it on Instagram. And again, I never mean that to suggest everybody is the same, because that's ignorant. Anyone anywhere who is broad stroking anything is ignorant.
من لما نشوف الستات بصوته بدهم مناشه وبنيجي نروح نعمل لهم اي شيء يطخوا علينا، في اعطل من هيك، في اعطل انه كل اللي احنا بنمر فيه من حرب نفسيه وجسديه، حرب من كله.
Yep. Very clear. Now, by the way, that would apply to whoever. Like, I mean, I'm sure there's cases where I, in the heat of the moment, will broad stroke something, and that would be me being ignorant. Doesn't mean constantly or that you're dumb. It can, but it just simply means that when that happens, it is an indication of an oversight, right? You are being broad, and that's not the way we should do this. And, I make mistakes like anybody, but the point is that we truly try to be better than that, because they are desperately trying to pull you the other direction. Everything in partisan media today is embarrassing, corporate and independent, ma'ams, because it's just gotten so broad and so subjective, and it's all conjecture. We all see it. People just like it sometimes. We like the news served up just the way you like, but I'm hoping that more and more people are beginning to see how wrong that is, that you're being deceived ultimately. So we'll leave it there for the day. Really just a horrifying thing in general, you know, that civilians are subjected to these kind of acts because of the power structures. It's a byproduct or direct action of these power structures, not the reverse. So they're safer because of them. Quite frankly, I think it's the exact opposite. I've made this argument about government my entire life. That ultimately, it comes down to you. Even right now, with what your illusion of the police and all these things. When's the last time you were in the middle of somebody attacking you and the police were just Johnny on the spot? It happens sometimes because it's just they happen to be there. But we know how this truly works. You call the police, there's an investigation, and half the time it leads nowhere. So the point is, and I'm not saying that's bad, good, that's their job. The point, though, is that the reality of the moment, it's always been you. You are there to protect yourself. Your family's there to protect you. That's the reality. So everything else is after the fact. So my point is that we need to realize that that's how it's always been. That the government, in my opinion, truly only seems to add another layer of danger to your life for many different reasons. And you could disagree with that, but the main point is that it's on us to be responsible for our own safety and our own well-being. And if you get that mentality, if you work that into your belief system, self-responsibility, it'll change your life, quite frankly. And it's the foundation of any true, you know, whatever you want to call what we want to strive for, representative government or any kind of concept of like a true, you know, for the people, by the people, of the people concept, you know, because the idea is if you allow these power structures to say, just don't worry, just sit back and we'll take care of it for you. Just check that box and we'll make sure you're safe and your seats are clean. You end up right where we are now. And that's everywhere you can look throughout history. And so we need something different. So that's a broad point. In general, I think that's where we should all be aiming right now. But focusing on the point today, realize that it's events like this that are being done to you in order to drive you in very specific directions. That's what I think. So let's just not let that happen. Let's not be played, whether it's an organic event that's being used, never let a good crisis go to waste, or it was manufactured in that event or somewhere in between. It is meant to manipulate you, or they will use it that way regardless. You know, you can say I'm jaded. I probably am. But I think we all know at some level that that is what these people are doing. So just push back, stand up. Don't let the partisan narratives scare you or convince you that only one thing matters. Question everything, guys. That's all it really comes down to. So thank you for being here. If you want to support us, there's lots of links down below, lots of different ways you can. Our Give, Send, Go is right at the top. That's our recurring thing we're trying to build. So at least, like I said, the first of the month, we're going to kind of see where we are in the recurring amount. All the amazing support we've got thus far, guys, they overdid it this month. I mean, I tell you, it allowed me to be able to deal with these things at least in the moment. And so it's because of you that we're able to keep doing this right now. So thank you for being here for us. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.